All right, it's Joel Radio. Welcome back, everybody. Joel Radio with you here for another fun-filled 90 minutes, 2 hours, who knows? Who knows how long this is going to take, but I got a fun show today. And I think I've been trying to do a show like this for a while, believe it or not. Long time. I've thought about this. I'm going to focus on my comedy class. Some of you have heard me talk about that. You will hear all about it today on Joel Radio. Thank you for joining me. So I want to talk about the advanced comedy class that I teach over at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle today. Because I got one coming up. I got one in a couple weeks. January 7th. Is that the date for you? Yeah, January 7th. If you want to sign up, call 248-542-9900. Sign up for the advanced comedy class. It's for comedians with some experience who want to get better at it. And I've invited some of my former students here today. I said, who are my favorite, who are my best students?
And they weren't available.
From my comedy class, exactly. Paula was busy tonight, so I said, who can I get? No, Ted Moss is here. Hi, Ted.
Hi, Joel. Good to be here.
Steve Hansen here as well. How you doing, Steve Hansen?
Good, Joel. Good.
So I'm trying to, the music's still playing. That's what's going on. Oh, what's going on? But Steve and Ted were both in my class, what was that? Almost 2 years ago now.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And now they're off doing comedy. Everywhere. I was talking to Ted about some of his antics at his shows. You don't have to tell those stories, but there was antics.
There are always antics. If we're lucky.
It wouldn't be comedy without antics. Yes.
Ted's got his road stories now.
Yeah,
the beginnings of your road stories.
Road story 101.
Yeah. And then Steve, I know, is working places and making money at it.
Yeah, it's trickling here and there.
Well, that's the idea of the advanced comedy class, is you go from being an open mic guy to a guy who can get
some McDonald's
money.
For free.
Yeah.
It's good.
You're doing well.
I'm getting there.
You guys are both doing well. So anyway, let's introduce ourselves a little more officially. Now, Steve, you were an attorney. You still are an attorney.
I'm still an attorney, yes.
And you
attorney.
Got started in comedy. Why and when? How long ago and what was your impetus for doing it?
Well, I'd always wanted to do it. I bought books about comedy writing back when I lived in L.A. back in 2003, and I just was too busy to do it. And then, I don't know, something happened in 2014. I said, I'm going to do it. And I took Bill's class, Bill Bouchard's beginner class at the Castle, and that lit the fire, and it's been going ever since.
And did you ever, had you been on stage before you walked into Bill's class?
In bands, not in comedy.
Oh, okay, yeah, all right. So bands. That's a different thing. And
it
Ted,
surely is, yes.
Ted, how about you? Tell us your life story up till now. Well, as quickly about comedy mostly.
Yeah,
because I said, Ted, tell us your life story. I said, fuck.
First the Earth was born. Then the dinosaurs came.
Long ago,
your parents were on a date one night, and your dad was doing well, and
there I was.
Yeah,
I started comedy about 3 years ago. Because I'm old and I don't have anything better to do. I was actually looking for something to be on my dating profile, and I thought comedy would look like a good thing.
Okay.
No, I had written a book, and I was doing some public speaking on the book.
Yes.
And it was hard to find an audience.
Yeah.
It was a parenting book.
Yeah.
And turns out that good parents don't need you, and bad parents don't show up. So I was thinking, why am I doing this? And it became apparent that I just like standing up front and talking. And
yeah.
Stand-up comedy.
Stand-up comedy. You're standing, you're talking, you're trying to elicit laughter. Show
don't even
a good
have
time.
To be good at it. Just got to show up over and over, and they'll let you do it.
Good. So then, and you also went through Bill's class, I believe?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And yours twice.
And mine twice. Yeah, because then I what happened was I was Bill's fill-in instructor. And I might have taught you guys. I can't remember exactly. But I would fill in for Bill when he was on the road. And then Bill said, look, I'm doing this advanced class, but it's too much work. I need a guy to do it. You do a good job filling in. Do you want to teach advanced comedy class? And since I'm already on the staff of Comedy Castle,
right.
It kind of made sense. I'm the guy who puts the open mic together. It sort of was sort of working, kind of now having, I don't want to say it's a system, but, you know, there is a little bit of you go, you know, if you're in the class and I know you're from open mic, it kind of keeps you in the mix there,
which
is a good thing. Which is a good reason to take it. It's not, you know, I say this about comedy class. So, you know, no one needs to take it. You can learn things on there. Everything I teach, because I never took a class, and everything I teach in the advanced comedy class, I learned doing it.
Oh, right. I think a lot of people
over
need
years
it.
And years.
Yeah, a lot of people need it. There's
but
a lot
it takes.
Of people.
But the thing is, people don't have years and years to go on the road,
especially Ted and I. We don't have that much time.
Yeah,
left.
Well,
and,
yeah.
So
four and more years.
Learning
and I'm out.
Quickly was imperative for us.
And it's you need, you know,
before the brain goes.
Some of these lessons, if you get them earlier, they will help you to avoid issues and maybe make your career that much speedier. And that's kind of the goal. And it's also not bad because Mark Ridley gets to take a look at you,
definitely.
See you multiple
big
times,
bonus.
And yep. That helps get eyeballs and. You know, I know after my class, you got work right there at the castle.
I did.
I mean,
he
booked you right away.
And he did.
You've done at least two weekends there now.
And a third is scheduled for February.
Look at that. Steve
yeah.
Hansen.
And I've taken three classes there and zero response from Mark so far. So
the thing is.
There's a message there.
Well, the thing is, you don't have to. You don't have to take, you know, you don't have to take comedy class to work at the Comedy Castle. Mark is always giving opportunities to new comics.
Right.
Every year, I would say he works probably a dozen new guys in to the rotation as MCs. And so, you know, if he likes you, but he has to see you. That's part of it.
Right.
And the only way he's going to see you if you're not booked there is on open mic or in a class.
Yep.
And the open mic, because it's a numbers game, you get 13 slots for 50 people. I choose a lot of them at random. I'm not going to lie to you, you know. So You only increasing your visibility at the club by taking a class, so that's another reason to take it.
How do you do that selection, Joel? I mean, do you pick
how do
one
I
or,
do it?
Yeah, do you pick one or two that you know, and then everybody yeah,
I,
else is
okay.
random?
The MC I always know. You know, the MC I always know.
Yeah.
That's a guy that I know. I go, this guy's funny, and I know him. I think he'll do a good job. Because the MC has so much more. We'll talk about the MC later.
Right,
but,
right.
you know, it's more. It's a more important job. It's a lot of other stuff in addition to just standing up being funny. You got to keep the light. You got to keep the time. You got to make
do the
sure.
announcements.
Do the
right,
announcements.
Right,
keep,
right.
you know, everything running well. So I sort of have to entrust somebody to that. So that's a person I always know. Usually I'll use a handful of people that are experienced. You know, like if a pro calls in, like a guy who would normally work the club and want some time, they usually get on.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then, you know, I'll look at a couple spots of people that I know. You know, I try to make it diverse. If I see women that I know or women's name that I, you
sure.
know, they have maybe a better shot of getting on.
Sure.
So I'm not saying, you know, now everybody's going to start calling in and I'm going, you know.
Hello, I'd like to get on the castle.
This is Jolena Fragonelli. I'd like to do comedy. You know, yeah, we don't want that. But, you know, I mean, I try to keep it diverse ethnically. I try to keep it diverse.
How'd you get out the castle? Oh, hormone shots.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's that. And then Mark just likes to see new people. So I take lots of just random names. You
right,
know?
Right.
So you never know. It's one of those things.
Sometimes, so your advice is keep calling.
Keep calling. If you don't get on, keep calling, keep calling. I mean, sometimes I pass over veterans for people I've never heard of.
Right.
Sometimes it's a lot of veterans. But, you know, Mark, coming from his direction is I want to see people I've never seen before. He goes, are there not people who've never played the club? I go, yeah. And he goes, well, that's who I want to see.
So I think that's great, actually. Yeah. That makes him stand apart from other places.
And I had to come around to that.
Yeah.
You know, I had to come around to that. Originally, I was like, I'm going to book the best show I can. I'm going to get the best 12 guys to be
right.
on the show. And then I realized that, and this is something that's, and I've always known this, but I thought with the comedy, but, you know, people, when they come out, they don't always want, and this is a problem people have when they put together their own shows, I find. And that's one of the lessons that's in the class is, you know, you always need new people.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can book the show and go, I'm going to make the best show I can with my buddies, and we're all going to do this open mic. It's going to be this killer lineup. But, you know, guys who have been doing open mic for a while, they generally don't bring people to the show.
Right.
And you get that new guy, that guy might bring 50 people, and all of a sudden you got an audience
yes.
that you wouldn't have had, even though you're trying to book this killer show. And I've also learned that people want to see, you know, it's one of those things. There is no, you can't be funny if everybody's funny.
Then nobody's funny.
Then nobody's funny.
You
right.
want a high and
you
a low.
Want you want you some guys.
You want some guy to
you
die
want some
in the
guys
middle of the show.
To suck, so
right.
the guys will look better,
right,
and
right.
that's part of it too.
Here's our sacrificial lamb for the day.
You can't have good without bad. You can't.
Go ahead, Bobby.
It's a very biblical way to look at comedy. Look, you can't. You know,
show them how it's not done.
Yeah.
yeah.
Boy, are we going to look good after him?
And so it does help. But audiences do like to, when they see an open mic, they do want to see somebody kind of fail.
Yeah.
That's kind of the fun in it. You know, is watching regular people do something that they're not used to doing.
Right,
you know, that's
right.
fun. That's part of the fun of it too. So yeah, that's how that gets done. But let's talk more specifically about the class, because
sure.
I want to go through what I've got. Is I've actually got, this is actually the sheet of paper that I use to teach the class. It's right. My notes.
There's
and
a lot of sheets of paper there, Joel.
Well, this one. These are all other sheets of paper. But what I do is I go through, and I'm going to just go through and talk about what we talk about in the class. You guys jump in and,
sure.
and where this has helped you. You know, like week one, I talk about different types of shows that you might do. We've just talked about an open mic here.
Sure.
But I like to tell people what the difference is between a showcase, an open mic, a regular show, a corporate show, a private show, a bringer show, an improv show, a one-nighter, a comedy club show. There's all kinds of different shows, and different shows have different requirements when it comes to cleanliness of the show, language. Me and Ted were talking about that before, you know, we were
that can
to
be
show.
An issue.
That can be an issue. What do people want? you know, what do different types of shows pay? We talk about that in there, you know,
right.
which pays good. So the introductory class is kind of that. We talk about a lot of that. We introduce ourselves. We talk about the different kind of shows that you do and the different kind of shows that you might do and what happens when somebody asks you, oh, I need you to do a corporate party. And what's your answer?
How clean do I have to be?
How much does it pay? And
Steve's down to 3 minutes of material.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I'll be brief.
You say I need lots of money for this.
Yeah, because
this is going to suck.
It's not
going
to be fun.
I actually am looking forward to trying those. To be honest with you, I like the idea of trying to learn about a company's business. And
I do too. I do
too.
And that's good. And that's
like
a good thing
idea.
To do to ingratiate yourself too. Yeah. If you're playing to a private party or something or a corporation. Find out who the boss is. Find out what he loves. This is my boss. He likes to hunt.
Yeah.
Or
he's,
oh,
this guy's
right,
got a boat. Right, he spends a lot of time on his boat. Then you got boat jokes.
Everybody loves it when you make fun of the boss.
Make fun of the boss. Yes. That's a great tip for a corporate show. Yeah. Find out who the boss is and rip him. Everyone loves it.
Yes.
Make sure he's laughing, though,
too.
Yeah.
Make sure he's got a sense of humor about himself.
Paid up front.
Yeah. Boy, this guy. Have you seen his wife and her new tits? Have you seen that?
Oh, my God.
That one may not work. So that's kind of the first week of the class. Then we get into writing. That's week two of the class, generally speaking, is writing. Now, writing's hard. You know, writing is something where people have asked. My philosophy to teaching writing is, well, since I'm teaching people who've already done comedy, that's what the advanced comedy class is for. You've done comedy, you've gone through Bill's class, or you've done it for, say, a year, you've got a 6-7 minute set. I don't want to sit there and try to teach you joke structure. And
sure.
You can get that out of a book if you want. You can
go
on the internet and read that. I think that would be a waste of our time to do that. I think that's something that you can independently sort of figure out and bring to it. But what I like to do is talk about the mistakes people make.
Sure.
You know, one of the big things I talk about is if you get rid of the stuff that's bad, you'll get better.
That was the best lesson I learned in the class.
Yeah.
Well, you put it differently, which is don't fall in love with your own jokes.
Right.
That's true. Yeah.
Right. I remember that.
If
too.
I were to pick one thing I really took away, and I take a hard look at my jokes, and there's a lot of dead bodies.
I always like to say your comedy set is an intersection of what you like, what you care about,
exactly.
what you think is funny, and then what the audience thinks is funny. You can't stand on stage all night and just do things that you think are funny and nobody gets.
And
it's
I see that over
comic.
And over again.
Yeah.
I see that
but
so much.
Conversely, you can't just do things that the audience is going to laugh at because then you're a hack.
And you're not authentic.
You're pandering to them,
right,
so you don't want
to
do that either. So that's a lot of what we talk about week two.
Sometimes it takes a lot of convincing, though. You have to say it
just
three or four times and go, well, you know, this is just dying.
That's another great
Even though I love this joke, it just isn't
You have
landing.
To do things multiple times in different rooms.
Different demographics, different situations.
But one of the things that I talk about is, you know, the mistakes. Here's one that I always talk about is polling the audience. And I fight with people on this. I fight with
That's
them every
so
class.
Easy. That's so
people
easy to
fight.
Do, though.
Yeah. It is. It's
a cheap laugh. It's
I do.
A fast
I,
joke. It's a,
and I know it's
applause.
Funny because I know we'll go out and do shows. It's another thing we do in the class is we go out and do shows together. And they'll go out and I'll always do a set when we go on. Because I always say I won't make you do something I don't want to do myself. So if I'm saying let's meet at the New Way Bar and do comedy, I'm also going to go up at the New Way Bar and do comedy.
We're all going to die together.
And I go up and I will do a poll, but I do it differently. Let me explain what polling the audience is for those people that don't know. Polling the audience is it's a way to get into a bit. It's not a bit in and of itself, but it's a way to get into a bit. Let's say you want to make a joke about your boss. And you go, who in this room hates their boss? And everyone applauds. Yeah, I hate my boss.
Right.
And then you go, my boss is such a jerk. He's blah, you know, and you go into the boss joke. What it is, it's getting cheap applause. It's getting the audience excited. It's audience reaction that isn't earned.
Yes.
You're fanning the flames. You're asking them to participate rather than letting them organically laugh. You know, you want the laughs to be organic. When an audience laughs, it's involuntary. They laugh. You know, when you think about when you're laughing, you're not thinking about, oh, I want to laugh right now. Somebody says, it's involuntary.
Right.
When you ask people to applaud for something, that is, you know, so a poll is a way that people do that. You know, who here, like, people have a lot of jokes about driving. Don't you hate our drivers? Don't we? Michigan has the worst drivers, don't we?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then everyone goes, yeah, we have the worst drivers.
Yeah, yeah.
And you see people do sets, and I see guys, and that's their whole set. Every bit starts with a pole. Okay, I'm going to talk about birthdays. Who had a birthday recently? Well, who's married in the crowd? Where are the married people? Yeah, I got my marriage jokes now.
Who has kids?
Yeah, I got kids. Where are my dog people at?
Yeah,
where
are my dog people at?
You know, who likes comedy? All right.
And, and it's an easy way to get into the bit is the poll.
Yeah.
But when I draw attention to it, I find people, because, you know, part of the class, too, is you get up and perform, you know. And
sure.
I dig you. People catch themselves. They're like, oh, man, I was going to do a poll here, but I can't now because you told me not to do it. And my advice is you don't need the poll.
Yeah.
If you have a joke about your boss, just tell about your boss. My boss is a dick. Here's why. Here's the joke. Boom.
I think once in a while, if you're having trouble engaging the audience to connect with you.
Look, polling,
dead silence.
Polling can engage the audience, but you can't use it as a crutch.
Sure,
It's a cheap way of getting the audience interested.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Now, you can also do a poll. Like, sometimes I do polls where they're like rhetorical questions. I'm not actually asking for a response.
Right.
You know, like I do a joke about Catholics. I Catholics are here. I know there's Catholics here. There's people drinking. Where are my Catholics at? You know,
Right.
And I'm going to do a joke about how Catholics are drunk, you know. And so I'll say, where are my Catholics at? But I'm not looking for you to applaud. I know you know what I mean? It's, you can do it in a way that's not, you know, that's not a, okay. Because another thing about the poll is, well, what if nobody's there?
Sure.
Where are my single people at? No one's single.
Right.
And then it's like, yes. Yeah.
I have one I do to berate the audience based on the answer. So I ask if there's any social drinkers there.
Yeah.
I tell them, you people are annoying, and that gets me into the end.
Right.
So
I mean,
that's the only one I really do right now.
There's ways of, you know, getting people applaud and then insulting them
and that.
And you can sort of turn it on its head a little bit.
Yeah.
But until I draw attention to it, I find that most of the students have at least one.
Yeah.
And some people have, like I said, they have every bit. Every bit starts with a poll.
Right, and then
it's like, you can't do that because it's exhausting to the audience.
Part of it is
it's exhausting to the audience. Especially if you're doing an open mic and there's 15 guys and you're the 15th guy and you're up there doing polls. It's like, they've been applauding for being single for 14 fucking guys.
Right. You know
the
answer.
Done. Yes. Just do the jokes. Do the jokes. It's all you got to do. So that's one thing I like to have people cut out. Think about it. You know,
sure.
Let me ask you this.
I would argue.
Let's argue.
I would argue that when you're just coming out and you want to introduce yourself to the audience, you want to establish what perspective you're talking from.
Okay.
But you also want to train the audience briefly how to respond. Like, I'm going to say something and I want a response from you when I stop. And a simple poll up front.
Yeah. People know what comedy is.
Yeah.
They just fucking land from Mars. They've been to comedy. They've heard comedy before. You're not the first person to tell comedy.
I mean,
how's everybody doing tonight? That's okay. I don't mind that.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, if you're doing an open mic,
15
people have asked them how they're doing tonight.
Yeah.
What about if you're opening the show and you're the host? You're the first one out, you know?
I mean, look, there's another thing I will say about my class, and I know I said this to you guys. There's exceptions to everything.
Sure.
And as I say these things, don't do this or always do this, there's exceptions to it. So I'm not going to say there's not exceptions to polling, but think about that. Think about just dropping the poll. The joke still
works. Yeah, at least give it some thought about whether there's a real good strategic reason to do it.
If the joke requires the poll, if it requires it, I don't know what joke requires it, but let's say you write a joke that requires it, then have the poll in there. It's okay. You know, it's all right. But you don't need the poll for that argument. Well, I mean, look, I disagree with you. But again, I mean, like, I'm not saying that, you know, a great comedian can't do a poll. It doesn't like, oh, this is shot. But I'm saying from an industry perspective, when somebody's seeing you that is, you know, say a booker or a veteran comedian and they hear you doing polls, they're like, yeah, this guy's taking shortcuts.
This guy's not good.
And that's a cheap way. You have to hear. I teach in the class a lot about, you know, hearing things from the perspective of the audience. But also I want you to hear your jokes from the perspective of me or a veteran comedian or a booker or somebody that's going to give you work. Do they want a guy that's up on stage doing polls?
Sure.
If I'm hiring you to work Saturday night, do we want you applauding for who's having a birthday? Not really.
You know,
people are paying money. They don't, you know, it's a rookie mistake.
Yeah. See, and this is a good example of what the class is like.
That's exactly
the students
it.
Say something and then you tell them why they're wrong. So
and I talk
that,
about
that's like that a
and
lot.
I talk about things like groaners and you can't have groaners and we don't have to go all into that and you know, segues. You don't need segues. It's another thing. You don't need segues, you know. But things like
that was actually really helpful, by the way.
Listing jokes.
I found that the the absence of segues often makes things way funnier.
And way funnier.
I think so, too.
Because it's almost
that abrupt change.
Because it's Tourette's-like. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, just like you just abruptly switch directions.
Well, you take people by surprise.
Yeah.
A lot of times. And otherwise, and also, it's just, again, these are human beings. They know you stopped talking about one thing, you started talking about the next thing. You don't have to string everything together. If stuff flows and you want to have a segue, that's fine.
One of my abrupt changes is one of my best jokes.
Yeah.
Everybody laughs at it. Like, oh, my God, it's there now. Who knew that?
Yeah, no, yeah, I mean, like, I'll just, you know, I have a small penis, I should tell you that. That's kind of like one of the things. I guess that's a segue, but it comes out of, you know, I mean, I'll say that in my act, and people, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Did you say that? You know, so there's stuff, you know, things like that. You don't do, you know, how to deal with a heckler. We talk about that a little bit. We talk about things like tags. We talk about callbacks. We talk about how to construct a set, you know, all that stuff. So that's kind of our writing lesson there. And I think that's important for most people. And that's what that's what they like. And I think people immediately, you know, whenever I do that one, there's always the guy that gets up and I go, okay, it's your turn to go up. And he goes, I don't have anything. You just told me to drop everything I have.
You just gutted my
set. I had a poll. I had a listing joke. I had this. I had a
bunch of you got nothing. Segues that went
together. See what you left with. See what you left with.
It was all brilliantly tied together by segues I can't use.
Yes, all those polls.
And then week three, we generally have a class about performance. And what performance, what that covers is everything that's not the act, everything that's not written. It is how you stand on stage. It's, you know,
where you stand.
Where you stand.
I still have not made it to that class.
You have you've missed that twice, you idiot.
I have.
Well, come in January. Just come sit in on that.
I have to remind myself of that one to stand back.
Well, that's
the
advice.
For the lights,
is,
half the time.
Is,
I like to. My natural tendency is to go to the front of the stage.
It's, that is a natural tendency, and what you find is that it can make look. If you're really good and you stand on the front of a stage, if Chris Rock stands on the front of the stage, he's going to fucking kill, okay?
Yeah,
that's not the difference.
Well,
but the thing is, you want to command the stage. It looks more professional. It looks like there's nothing wrong with standing center stage. But yeah, if you stand too close to the front, a lot of clubs, the lights will be over your head.
Right.
You know, the lights are generally set up to be
shadowed.
And it just looks like you're more relaxed. You're commanding the stage. You're not getting in their face. And also, it's about having that dynamic of, if I need to walk to the front of the stage or I need to engage with a certain audience member, I can now walk up and engage them, and it makes for a little more tension,
sure,
a little more emphasis, a little nonverbal emphasis. If you're standing back, you have that. If you're at the front, there's nowhere to go.
Right.
You know,
I
you
tend
want
to
have
wander.
That dynamic, and that's okay.
I wander.
And that's
back
okay
and
to
forth
wander.
And forward
but when
back
I watch
and...
people walk up on stage, or, you know, they do a lot of these open mics where people are sitting far away and they want to just walk up and stand right at the front edge, and it's like, nah, stand back. It's fine.
Yeah.
If it just makes you look more relaxed. And again, that was something somebody taught me. You know, Bill Hildebrand taught me that. He's like, command the stage. Don't lean. Don't lean into them. That was a big thing. Don't lean. He goes, oh, we have this guy, and he gave this guy's a leaner. He likes to lean. That's how he would say it. You know, lean in there and do that. You know, so there's a lot of that stuff on stage. We talk about using your notes. When's it appropriate to use the notes?
Right.
Should you use the mic stand? Should you not use the mic stand? All that stuff is in the performance. That's that stuff that, you know, what to wear on stage. That's another big one. I hear that from people all the time. You know, you guys started dressing up, man, and shows got better. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of. That can work that way.
Yeah.
You know,
well, the nice thing is that it's not just a solid lecture. We can interrupt you and ask questions.
You can, yeah.
And that, and everybody does.
Well, if you have questions. I mean, a lot of it is asking questions and me answering them. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's part of it. And then we talk about week four, the MC spot. We talk about that. We train you to be an MC in the advanced comedy class.
Yeah, that was very important.
Yeah, that's
very
important.
Very important.
And a lot of that stuff, of course, everything in here is, you know, a lot of that comes from Mark Ridley himself.
Right.
You know, when I started teaching this class, I brought in my notes. I said, Mark, I got this and this and this. Anything you want to add on that topic? Oh, yeah, add this, that, and the other thing. So a lot of this comes right from Mark. You know, what is Mark Ridley looking for in an MC? Of course, Mark Ridley is the guy who came up with the three comic format. He is credited in the comedy industry.
Oh, I didn't know that.
With three comedians, because what he was doing was Mark will tell you the story better than I can, but Mark, you know, the Comedy Castle was based on the Comedy Store in L.A.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mark went out to the Comedy Store in L.A. in 79, and or whenever that opened, or he was out there. He started the Comedy Castle in 79, but he was out at the Comedy Store, and he said, I would like to do this in Detroit, and he said, I would like to bring Mike Binder, he knew from Detroit, who was out there doing stand-up. And he said, well, I'm going to bring in Mike Binder and his buddies. Actually, he was the guy who did Make Me Laugh, if you remember Make Me Laugh.
Yeah, I do.
The show, those were Ridley's comics, believe it or not, because I think Binder booked all those guys.
Oh, all right.
And so you would plug the comedy. Basically, the guys would go on Make Me Laugh, okay? And they would say, I'm appearing in January at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle in Detroit.
Okay.
And he would book all those guys, and that's what they would use the books. The Comedy Castle's name was on national television they were all getting booked.
That's cool.
But if you went to the Comedy Store in L.A., you would see 10 guys a night or something. It was a showcase format.
It was always a showcase.
It was always. I think it's still a showcase. I mean, they have different shows, but most of the time you go in, and most of the L.A. clubs, a lot of New York clubs are showcases. You go in, you see a bunch of different guys. But Ridley said, we don't have 10 guys doing comedy. We want to do a three-comic show. Because rather than bringing in, you got to bring in 10 guys from L.A.
Right, sure.
You're only going to bring in, like, two guys from L.A. or one guy from L.A., and then we'll use local guys to be the openers. And then you came up with the three comics.
Okay.
The opener, the feature,
and the headliner.
And the headliner.
Now, do they do that in the rest of the country?
Well, other clubs started taking that format for themselves.
Really?
Now. Yeah. So Mark invented that, and then other clubs adopted it. Hmm. So when you see a three-comic show, that is Mark Ridley's invention.
Mark's formula.
Oh, that's
it is
cool.
His formula. And Mark was the MC.
Yeah, in the beginning.
In the beginning, for years and years. Yeah. He was the actual host, so he knows how to
host. Do you have tapes of that?
I don't have tapes of it. He may, because, you know, the Comedy Castle did television shows back in the day and all kinds of stuff.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think on TV, if you guys live in Detroit.
Oh, I remember on TV, sure.
I think they had live from the Comedy Castle. Wow. There would be television tapings there and stuff. So I'm sure there's video of Mark Ridley doing comedy somewhere. I don't know where it is. But he came up with a lot of the MC stuff, and we talk about why the MC is important. Why you should want to be the MC. Very common thing I hear is, I don't want to be an MC. I want to be a feature. I want to jump
a lot of work.
That spot. I want to be the feature act. And I'll tell you in the class why you want to be the MC. Why you should do it.
Sure.
And that's one thing we talk about. You know, what is the difference between the MC and the other spots of the show? You know, what are the different spots? How much time are you supposed to do in these spots? Why the MC should not do time in between the acts. That's very important.
Oh, my God, is that important.
Boy, I wish everyone could hear that.
That is so important.
I would tell this now.
We could name some shows if we wanted to, couldn't we?
God, it is so horrible. When
there's certain guys.
Three more minutes. Boy, have I got a good joke for you now.
Yeah, well.
I didn't think about this earlier.
Comics, and again, a lot of that is seeing the show from the audience's perspective. That's the large part of that.
Yeah.
Is... the audience, once they've seen you, they don't want to see you again. They don't care who you are. They've seen you. They want to know that the show is moving on. When I talk about when people come to a comedy show, the thing that they want out of any comedy show anywhere, I don't care if it's open mic, if it's headliner show, if it's the Fox Theater, if it's Joe Louis Arena, they want to ultimately go home sometime. And I know people think that's so funny that I say they want to go home. Yeah, they want to go home.
It's true.
They want to, and then they want to know when they're going home.
You don't
want
to be an endurance contest.
Feel that there's going to be a point when this person who is hosting is going to go, hey, that's it for the show. Thanks for coming out.
Just like having sex. They want to get to the finish.
Yeah,
come on, we got to be finishing.
And the MC is the conduit for the audience. It's the way of going, we're seeing this guy. That means we're that much closer to...
only two more to go.
Yeah, we're this closer to this. And so when you're out there and you go, wow, that was fun, wasn't it? Well, have I told you about my kids yet? Let me tell you about my boy.
No, I've seen shows go two and a half hours just because the MC's doing 5-10 minutes between comics.
And look,
that's horrible.
And the MCs want to do it later because, oh, now the audience
now
is warmed
laughs,
up.
Right,
oh, now they're warmed up.
Yeah.
But at the Comedy Castle, you know, the MCs have a strict policy. You don't do time in between the acts. You don't do it on the weekend shows. You don't do it on the open mic. You come out. You do all your stuff at the front. If they didn't like it, hey,
that's it.
Too fucking bad.
Right.
You're the one getting paid. Yeah. Deal with it, you know?
I've run a couple shows. I'm running one now, and I MC all the time at other places, and I follow that rule religiously.
You got to.
I follow it
you
religiously.
You got to. It makes the show better. And ultimately, the audience will like you. Even if the audience watches you, and they see your opening set, and they're not laughing, because a lot of times they're not. I mean, Wednesday at Comedy Castle Open Mic, that's a tough spot when you're the MC there. You guys have both done it.
Yeah.
It's not easy. It's much easier to go towards the end of the show or in the middle.
At least in the middle,
And but what you realize is the audience will like you if you keep it moving.
Yes.
If you have a, like you know, maybe you have a witty intro or a witty, you know, somebody says something funny when you come out, hey, give it up for someone, you know, and you have something funny there. That's cool. You have to sit there and do material all night. It just makes the show longer.
Yeah, I mean, I might throw out a one-line tag off.
Oh, no, no, those are excellent. Yeah, you know? It's timed together.
And when you figure out how to do those,
they're fun.
Makes you good.
Yeah, they're really fun.
So you definitely want to not do time in between the acts. You're just delaying the whole thing. But if you do a good job as the MC, again, even if your set wasn't good, I see MCs all the time. They go out and, you know, they're saying hi to the crowd after. No, that was really good. Good job, MC.
They will congratulate you, even though they don't give you the applause.
They still will like you if you're likable, and that's what Mark.
They're
liked,
just like
you know?
I just couldn't laugh at that point in my
life. And Mark,
I can thank you now and shake your hand.
Yeah.
But there's really more poor MCs than good MCs. I think there's people struggling at it than people.
But everyone needs a good MC. That's why I should be an MC, and you should be a good MC. You will find tons of work being an MC. That's the first. That's the entry level job in comedy.
Well, some people, you really have to have a certain level of energy and enthusiasm to do it.
You do. Right.
You can't be Stephen Wright.
There's guys. You know what I mean? Like, there's guys who are too dry to be
way
an MC.
Too quiet.
I get it.
Yeah.
But you know, people if they. But I also feel like if you can be a good MC, then you can kind of do anything.
Sure.
Because there is a level of crowd work that is involved in being an MC, and that can help you with that. Because sometimes you'll go out to gigs, and sometimes it's just a two-comic show.
Right.
You know, if you do a two-comic show, well, you're the feature. You want to be the big shot feature. Well, now there's nobody in front of you.
Yeah.
So now you're the MC and the feature.
Yeah.
Well, now you're doing all that MC stuff, and you're trying to get people. So, you know, being a good MC is always, it's always a job that is... that is needed. There's always a demand for it. At Comedy Castle, too, the other thing is that, you know, if you go on the weekend, a lot of times headliners are the MCs. Guys like Kevin McPeak will be the MC. Guys, you know, you never know. Kevin Kramus will be the MC.
Sure.
These guys have been doing comedy 20 years.
Wow.
But they do it because they know they're getting paid for it.
Right.
And, you know, it's they're good at it.
Yeah, I think Steve Sabo was just an
MC. Yeah, Steve Sabo was just an MC.
Yeah,
Steve Sabo,
I just saw that. Yeah, and he's a headliner.
So you can't. You can't just go, well, you know, I'm the MC and, the middle, I'm better than the middle. And I've seen guys come in and they go, God, I'm better than this middle. Why is this guy middling and I'm the MC?
Right.
You know, you can't have an ego. You got to set your ego aside a little bit. And then we talk about, by the time we get to week five, we're talking about business. And I guess the biggest lesson that I'll share on this podcast out of that one is, I mean, part of it is, you know, how to get booked. How to, you know, what do you need when you want to do comedy professionally?
Sure.
I need headshots. I need a resume.
Bios
I need these things. I need a bio. But one thing is about how to set up your own show. And boy, I think if I could give something to comedy, and I can't give it myself, it needs everyone's help. If everybody booked one show, every guy who did comedy booked one show. That's all we need. Comedy would be the healthiest it's ever been. All we need is one person to run one show that you can actually get paid at.
The problem isn't getting the shows booked or ran. The problem is getting an audience.
Well, that's true.
But the audience is, and I don't think the people in comedy are marketing people by nature.
Well, that's one of the things.
And that's really important.
That I try to teach in class is how to run a good show, how to book a show that you can afford to do, that venues will, I think, in my experience of booking, will give you an opportunity of doing.
Right.
And putting on something that audiences are going to respond to. Because one of the problems with, you know, anyone can do an open mic. You know, people will give you the room for free.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a problem doing a free show.
Yeah.
But the problem with the open mic is it's getting that repeat business. And it's getting people to come back. And a lot of times people see open mic comedy and they've seen enough of it for weeks, months.
Sure.
And they don't need to see it every
week.
You know?
I just did a really good show, really good people on the show. I mean, it was Zach Martino was on it.
Okay.
Michael Jeter was on it. And the audience was all the comics and maybe five people.
Yeah.
You know, you got to learn how to market and advertise the thing.
But
it doesn't matter how good the party is if nobody shows
up. It's marketing, but it's also, you know, book it as, because I feel like when you give it away, people won't show up. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
If you charge a cover, you will get you think you're getting more people because you're giving it away for free, and that generally doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And I know sometimes places it's hard to do a cover because that bar doesn't do a cover most nights.
No, I've definitely gotten resistance.
And you get resistance from club owners doing it, but you just go, look, give me 8 to 10 on Saturday. From 10 o'clock on, you do whatever you want. We'll charge a cover for those 2 hours. That's it.
Right.
We'll charge $5, $10. You'll get paid. Everybody gets paid. And the show, people will enjoy the show more if they pay money for it. And I know people don't understand that. But people, even if they spend $2 to watch, they will ultimately be a better audience and enjoy it more if they paid for it.
One of your recent students just put on a show, one of his first shows, charged $15 a head.
Okay.
It was in a restaurant.
Yeah.
It was just added to everybody's tab.
Okay.
It was in the restaurant.
That's a good way to do it. Yeah,
it was a great way. Yeah. And,
I gotta add that to my lesson plan.
That's a sneaky little trick.
Put it on the tab.
Yeah, and there was more than 50 people there.
Yeah,
and it was a good show. And because they all knew they were paying, they were all laughing. They were all engaged.
Right.
You know, and the whole place, we dimmed the lights in the whole place. Everybody was quiet. Everybody's ready to listen because they're paying for it.
Yeah, and that's something you learn when people pay for it. There is an expectation that it's going to be good. So you can't have people pay and it suck.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, the idea is to not suck. You know, the idea is when they're paying, that's when you're using the professionals. So when I talk about if everyone ran one show, it'd be nice if everyone ran one professional show. Nothing against open mics. I like open mics. I love them, in fact. And they're very important to comedy. But do we need 8 of them a week? 10 of them a week?
Yeah.
I don't know. Let me. There is, to me,
you're gonna argue with
a
me.
Need. Well,
here we go.
I'm not at the level where people are gonna book me for these pro shows, but I've been around. And
yeah.
So there's a lot of more unpaid showcases where there's selectivity going into comics.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard to get to charge a cover, like, you know, the bar pushes back. But I think that they're important shows because they're giving good people who are really working at it better stage time in front of audiences.
I mean, it is, look,
my last show in Royal Oak, that worked out that way.
You ran some really nice shows in Royal Oak.
Yeah, one we run now in Oxford. Is similar.
Stage time is great, and that's all good. But
in front of a real audience.
Well, here's what I find. I feel like if a venue is going to give you a real venue at a, you know, I'm not talking about like Tuesday nights, but I'm talking Friday, Saturday
night.
Right. You know, you can get an audience. They will pay money on a Friday, Saturday night. They really will. And you know, you're finding a venue is a huge part of it. But if you pay, if people are paying and you give them a good show, people go, well, I don't know real comedians. And I go, well, if you have a budget, you'll get them. Yeah. They'll find you when you have a budget.
Sure. Yeah.
And the thing about it is make yourself the host.
I did.
Or make your buddies the host.
I absolutely did.
Make, you know, Steve, you book Ted as the host. Ted, book Steve as the host. Whatever. Right. And then what you'll find is that when those guys have other shows and they need an MC, they need a guy to do a show for a few bucks, they'll call you. You gave them work.
We're doing that too. Like Billy Reno set up a new show in Shelby Gardens, where it's exactly that format.
That's a nice venue too.
But there's still, I think, a need for the people who've got 2 or 3 years to get in front of real audiences.
I agree with you. But I think the health of the industry, I see a lot of guys who... you know, there's guys who won't work for free.
Right.
And a lot of guys are sitting at home.
Right.
When they could be making money. And I feel like the industry would be better if more guys that were really good at it, that can do an hour, were doing that hour.
Yeah, sure.
And guys who are doing open mics were, you know, watching.
Right.
Those guys do an hour. Right. And that might be a good thing, too. You know, one of the most important things I did, and no one does this anymore, but, you know, Joey's Dearborn, which was the club that Bill Hildebrandt ran in Dearborn, you know, he would have Thursday night. And imagine this today, because this is pre-social media.
Sure.
There was an internet, but there was no real
comedy
networking on the internet. It really didn't exist. But he would say his Thursday night, he'd have his headliner show. And he would say, I'll put 3 guys on in front of the headliner on Thursday night at paid show. You know, paid. I mean, you kind of get paid.
Oh,
but
Lynch
the real stuff. Show.
Yeah. I've
the real show
model.
Would
right,
be.
Right.
I'm going to put guys up. So national headliners would come in, and you would get to perform in front of them.
Right.
When you were starting out.
Right.
Now imagine how many guys would show up if I said, "Hey, Thursday night at Comedy Castle," and there wouldn't be a list. There wouldn't be a call. You would show up on the night and go, I want to do 5 minutes.
Oh, just to build. Okay.
Yeah.
So
and they would do that.
Comic audience. Yeah.
But
I'm saying, but you know what I'm saying? But like 2 or 3 of us would show up.
Yeah.
Because there was no social media. So, you know, like it was amazing. And we would get to go up in front of all these headliners. And we get to sit there and watch the headliners and talk to them and have pizza with them after and have this great experience. Now you can't do that now. Because if I put on Facebook, come to Comedy Castle and do a set in front of Tom Papa, 500 guys would show up.
Sure.
Right.
And you can't do that now. So it was a different era. But that was a really important thing. So I think a good thing for young comics is when it's Saturday night, go watch a show.
Sure.
Go watch a headliner. And I see you guys coming all the time.
You guys have
taken that to heart. But just go watch a guy. You'll learn a lot watching a pro.
Oh,
but don't sit there and don't, you know. And it's also, you know, guys watch Netflix and they watch YouTube. And that's important. But see somebody live.
Yeah.
There's so much live that you can't get. Because all those specials, even the best guys, they're cooking the audience reaction on those things.
There's a lot of editing.
There's editing. There's, you know, usually those guys are taping at least 2 shows that they're editing
and
together to make one.
Yeah, right.
And so there's a lot that you see live that you don't get watching it on TV.
Even the showcases are good to see live. I mean, I watch more shows than I participate in. And I think that's a good experience.
Yeah.
I think the fatal flaw, though, in trying to get people to the show is people are dependent on Facebook. And if you want to talk to comedians, Facebook's a good way.
It is a good way.
But if you want to capture an audience, I really think you still got to go out a week ahead of time and put a flyer at the venue.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's got to be out there a week. You know, it's like a church. Yeah. People will come back to their church.
Yeah, wherever the venue's doing.
And they're going to come back the next day. So don't put it up the day before.
Yeah.
Give them a week so they know it with a big date.
Well, you look at the people who are there. If your show is Saturday night at 8 o'clock once a month, you go there the other three Saturdays and go, hey, there's comedy in 3 weeks. There's comedy in 2 weeks.
You've got to advertise to the patrons of that venue.
And if they've got stuff on the table that's there, put something on they got table tents.
Absolutely.
Put it in their table tents. Put it on their bulletin board.
Flyer with the bills that go out.
If they've got a sign outside that rotates,
but
put comedy night Saturday.
It can't just be the day before, though. It's got to be like the week before. You got to tell them that next Wednesday.
So we talk about all these things in the class. That's another big lesson that we do in the class, is setting up your own show. I'm shocked by how few of them. And I know you've set up a show. And Ted, I think you've run your. Have you set up a show yet?
No.
But you know, I know some guys are doing shows, and it's great. But I'd like to see more guys do more shows of the professional level, and I am preaching that. But you know, I'm not always. It's harder. Look, it's harder. I get that it's harder, but we need more of that. We need more of that.
Well, we may, but you know, my goal is really not to just work to be a show producer. My goal is.
No,
to
I understand
stage
that,
time,
but it's a good way for you to get your own stage.
If
time.
You're now, if you MC it and you're there all the time, then I guess it works out.
Yeah,
for
it works out great. Yeah,
well, the guy that put that show together that I headlined, he had the headliner drop out of that show, called me 2 days ahead of time, said, "Will you headline this show?
Yeah.
I want you to, you know, in this case, it was 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's not
Can
really
you do that? And I thought, well, yeah, I could probably do 20. I rattle a lot. Well, whatever. But I was going to close the show, and he was going to pay me so much money.
You were the last guy.
The last guy on the list he could possibly call.
Yeah.
But in any case,
so you'd be the last guy.
He had to bring in $700.
Yeah. Oh, you say off the cover?
Yeah.
Well, if you put up the money, he deserves to make
money.
That's the other thing. You can make a lot of money putting
on
your
shows. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And some guys don't need the money. And Steve, you don't need the money. But yeah, I mean,
Steve doesn't care about money.
But you can.
His wife does, but he doesn't.
Yeah, I just gave up.
You know how many comedy wives run the show that the husband books? That's pretty common, too.
Is it really?
Oh,
yeah.
The wife stands at the door, collects the money while the husband's
on
the road.
That's a good
idea. And she's there running the show. And
she can't run away with the money. She's going to go home with you.
Gives her something to do,
somehow.
She brings it home to you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. I can put it away.
Keep it involved in the company business.
The point is, he made a lot of money, and the quality of the comics, if I was headlining, wasn't that great. I mean, it was okay.
Yeah.
I mean, we're okay. We're just all okay, but there is money to be made if you do it right.
Yeah, but I will say, even with the pro shows, you really have to promote the hell.
You do,
the
you do.
Pros do not, with all due respect, do a lot of promotion.
Well,
themselves.
That's not their job, though. That's not your job.
I know,
job
but I don't
the
think
comic.
The people know that.
Yeah, no, they don't know that. Yeah, they don't know that.
Because I've been to a lot of pro shows where nobody showed up.
Yeah, and usually what you get out of a headliner is they put it on their social media, their Twitter, their Facebook, and they go, "I'm going to be here next week, or I'll be here Friday night if you want to come out."
Which is great for comics.
But you know, again. You know, if you don't have any skin in the game as a headliner, then why, you know, it's a lot of effort.
Sure.
You know, that's why you see comics with door deals.
Right.
And we talk about what door deals are versus a straight money deal. And, you know, if you do a door deal, that's where you see the guys who are like, "I'm going to go do radio for this because it's a door deal."
Yeah, right.
You know, "I'm going to go do this. It's a door deal." Yep. I got this, you know, I've seen guys. I saw guys do a door deal. They got a billboard on I-75.
Really?
A door deal. And then when they paid for the fucking thing, whatever that is, $50 a day or whatever a billboard costs.
Wow.
I don't know.
Not that expensive.
I've never priced that. Yeah.
If I think it's something like that. Yeah, you can get a billboard for $50 a day.
Really?
It depends where it is. I think they all cost different depending upon where they are.
God, I might just do that for fun. Like, I don't even care if I have a show.
I might do it for dating.
Yeah, I think,
put my face up there.
Yeah.
This is Ted Moss. Yeah. Date him.
This is Ted Moss.
Give me a call.
$50 a day.
Just cover the cost of the billboard.
But, you know, I've seen guys.
I just swipe left on a billboard.
I saw guys do that. We talk all about that in the class, too.
Swipe in a windshield. Keep swiping.
So if you're interested in that's pretty much what we talk about. And of course, you know, we always go over your sets. There's a lot of hands-on about your sets.
Right.
I critique your set. The other students critique your set. We do that every week. We go out to different shows and perform live. I make copious notes. I sit there with my notebook and fill in everything I want to talk about, and we talk about it the next time we get into class. And so
I still have my notebook, and I refer back to it, especially before I do an MC weekend at the Castle. So So yeah, a lot of great information.
I mean, yeah, we talk about everything you need to know. So if you're thinking, if you're on the fence about comedy class, you go, I don't really need a comedy class, but this one is a good one. It's taught by someone who never took a comedy class.
Yeah.
But I've made a class. It would be what I would want to know if I could go back in time and find Joel in 2001 and 2000 and go, teach me all this shit.
Sure, sure.
Is, you know, if I had, a, you know, that's what I'd want to know.
Yeah, well, I have a lot of comedy books, and there's none of them really put it together the way you do in this class.
Yeah,
so.
it's hands on really from somebody helpful. Who's been doing the road for 17 years and who's learned and who's performed in all kinds of different venues, all kinds of different shows.
Yep. If you're just starting out, how else are you going to learn? I mean, where do you have an opportunity to actually ask somebody that has done it?
Sure.
How do you do it? And there is.
Well,
you can
I see guys who hang out at the comedy show.
Yeah, but you know, you're going to get flippant answers.
Yeah,
and you,
yeah.
I mean, when can you sit down for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and actually interview a comic about the art of
and
doing
that's
comedy?
One thing about my class that I found, and you're one of the guys who's taken it more than once, is some guys.
That's because I don't take notes.
Well, it's not taking notes, but people like to just sit.
Yeah, should he be bragging about that?
Well,
that's a remedial situation, isn't it?
I know. I have problems.
You were held back in comedy class,
but guys, you know, guys like to come around.
We'll see you again next year.
And they like to shoot the shit about comedy. And one thing I do every class after the first one is we start the class by talking to everybody. What'd you do this week in comedy?
Right.
We go around, what'd you do in comedy this week, Ted? And Ted goes, well, this week I played here and I played there. There was nobody there. And then I did the show. And then I, you know, some guys will go, well, I watched this new Netflix special from so-and-so. Or I went and saw this guy at the Fox. Or, you know, some guys will go, I did this open mic. How'd it go? I did this jokes in class and I learned. And, you know, so everyone is learning from everyone else, you know. And that's another important thing that I built into the class early on is I said, well, maybe we'll just kind of, you know, show and tell. In a sense, you know, just sort of like, what'd you do this week? Well, I did the show. Well, that's good. Who books that? I'll go up there.
No, that was really helpful. That was really helpful.
Yeah, you can learn about shows you haven't done.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I think that's become an important thing to the class is also that networking and learning
Absolutely.
From everyone else. And, you know, I will tell you, this class is going to fill up. The word of mouth has been good. So if you're listening to this, please make a call to 248-542-9900. Call the Comedy Castle and sign up if you can take it because I think I had, as we're recording this, I think the last time I checked, about 5 open spots. I have to hard limit it because you can only have so many people on that showcase. That's another thing we do.
Sure. Right.
We do a showcase at the end, and one of the students becomes the MC, and both of you guys had the opportunity to be the MC.
That was fun.
In that class show, and I paid you for doing it.
Yep.
Not a lot, but you did.
That's what MCs get paid to Wednesday Night at the Comedy Castle.
It was a very realistic thing.
It was
so
a real
realistic
training.
Welcome to the real world.
Which class is this you're on now?
How many? A number? I can't remember. 7, probably. Oh, 6 or 7.
You know, the other good thing about being in the class, whether it's your class or Bill's class, you almost have this camaraderie between you and the fellow students because you're kind of learning together.
Yeah.
And then those are the same people you're going to see out.
Yeah,
you
see them out.
Yeah, at the shows. And it's good to have those connections, that background.
And you can always hit me up for advice, too. I mean, I know you and I were chatting the other day. And, if you have a question about comedy or something about, like, people always go, like, I'm going to book this show. How much do I pay people? You know, I get that question a lot from people. I'm going to hire this person. How much are, you know, people ask me all the time, I need a guy to do I need a guy to do this party. Somebody, or people say, like, somebody asked me to do this, and I don't think I'll be good at it. Who'd be good at it?
Sure. I think I was asking you about splitting up time.
Yeah, yeah.
How much should the headliner get? How much should the opener? And you're kind of giving me some ideas on that. So
90-minute show.
Yeah,
always
go from there.
I never go over.
90. That's enough.
I've been
enough.
I've been religious about that. Yeah,
we'll try to keep this podcast at 90, but sometimes sometimes it's 3 hours because we can't shut up.
We're just too compelling. But
we are interested.
But anything else comedy wise, we're going to move on to some other stuff. I got movie and TV stuff for you and that. But what else comedy wise? Anything you guys want to promote or any stories from the road?
I can promote for sure. I'm seeing at Big Tommy's this weekend.
Oh, Big Tommy's in Novi.
Billy Reno, one of your graduates, is featuring.
Okay.
Is he going to feature? Good.
Yeah, it's
good
Friday.
Well, Billy's a funny guy.
He's
Billy
a very funny
lot.
Guy. He's one of my best friends in comedy. Yeah.
He was just trying out for America's Got Talent or something like that.
Yes, he did in Cleveland. Yeah,
that's very cool.
Yeah, I'm doing the Troy Comedy Underground for the first time Sunday.
Okay.
So I finally cracked that.
I went to that. I've never performed on that. I went there once. I saw a little tiny bit of it. I saw like 5 minutes of it. It's a neat venue.
Yeah, the Park Bar. Yeah.
It's a neat venue. I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends how many people they get there.
Yeah, we'll see.
You know, it's one of those, but It's all right.
And then our monthly show in Oxford at Sullivan's Pub is Billy and I run it. That's,
all right,
that's
cool.
Next Wednesday, the 21st.
How many shows are you doing, Steve? Just one now?
I only really run that one.
And Billy runs another one.
Billy runs a lot. Like, Billy runs that one with me. He runs the Hamlin Pub.
Yeah, I've been.
And he's
at
starting a new one at Shelby Gardens, which is a pro show, like the kind that Joel was talking about doing. So.
Billy running it.
Yeah, Billy's becoming a magnet.
Good for him. Well, yeah. Billy's a good
guy. To know.
You want to have good guys in comedy, because that's another thing. When comics run shows, they're always better than when you get the bookers.
Yeah.
Because the bookers are scumbags, generally. Yeah. The bookers are low-life, bottom-feeder assholes.
Right.
And if you're a comedy booker, I want to repeat, you're a low-life, bottom-feeder, scumbag asshole.
How do you get into that?
Unless you
want to
book
me
as Steve Hansen, yes. Then I feel differently about that.
You are that. I say that as a guy who doesn't do the road anymore. Fuck you and your fucking gigs. But when comics do gigs, they're better gigs because they know what comics want out of them. They're always better. Ted, what are you up to?
I really don't have anything going other than the LA Express.
Yeah,
now
this is one thing.
Steve's in that too,
though. 25th of January.
Are you guys both in the finals of the LA Express Comedy Challenge? Jeez.
Face to face. Mano on mano.
One of the things, I think it's week one. It might be week one, lesson one.
Contests?
Hi, I'm Joel Fragamenti. Welcome to the comedy class. Contests suck. Don't do them. And then I find all of my students are the people that not only do them, they fucking win them. So I guess...
I wouldn't say the advice is don't do them. The advice is have no expectations.
Have a realistic expectation.
Because they are a chance to get in front of audiences.
They are.
Yeah,
they
if
are.
You don't bring your friends, you aren't going to win.
But what I find, though, is that people that do the class, when they do a contest, they don't have that expectation of winning.
Right.
And they're more seasoned from having been through the class. And the audiences react better to it. And a lot of these are audience votes. You know, bringing people is so important. But I know that... in the contest that you guys are in, the LA Express Comedy Challenge, there's been judges for all of them.
Right. I think that's good.
And
to have
I think the final is going to be judged by judges. Now, sometimes the judges are regular people. Sometimes they're pros. Sometimes they're a mix of both. I've been a judge for some of those.
Right.
And so that's, I think, important to have that, to have a judge.
Well, really.
So it's not just the guy who brings all the people wins.
Sure.
You know, in the opening rounds, it was... You know, an audience vote and then a judge's vote.
Right,
so the guy who brought all the people always got in, and then
the
judge was the person who was
but
funniest.
But that became more obvious at the next level.
Yeah, it did. It did. Yeah. So some of those guys who brought all the people didn't move on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know there's some good guys in the finals, and you guys certainly both have a shot of winning it. And but again, I say if you don't want to do a contest because you don't, because look, they feel bad to lose. And I know I had some really good guys, students of mine and guys who didn't move on.
Yeah.
And and I look at those guys and I go, maybe you're even better than the guys that did move on, but
well, once you learn to feel bad a lot, which is what happens in comedy, it's okay.
All crying in our car at one day or another.
Bad.
Why didn't that work yesterday?
Yeah,
I don't
know. You can't expect to ever win the contest. Yeah. No matter how many people you bring,
exactly.
No matter how funny you are. If I did a contest right now, 12 people off the street. And when I say off the street, I don't mean guys who think they're funny, that know they're doing a comedy class in 6 weeks
living on the
and
street.
Stole jokes. I'm talking literally.
Yeah.
Go outside the fucking Walmart.
Right.
Find 12 guys. Yeah. Bring them to a comedy club on a fucking school bus.
Come on, you guys are
put
in.
Put them up. You, them 12 against me.
Yeah.
I don't believe I win in any scenario.
No.
I really think I will probably not win. I'm not saying I won't be funny on that show to an audience.
Well, they may have more friends.
But
I'm saying
I have no confidence in beating anybody. I saw a show. God, I'm not going to say the names. But a guy did one of these multi-week things at a club a few years ago. This club doesn't even really run comedy.
Yeah.
Anymore, but they did it. It was a little one-nighter thing. And they decided to run a contest because it was summer. And they'll bring people in. Everyone will bring their friends.
Sure.
And we realize when summer's over, no one fucking came.
Yeah.
That's why you don't do contests for another reason. But, and a guy who is a pro who goes, I'd like $1,000. So he entered.
Oh.
And a guy who's a killer, not just a guy who's like a pro, but a guy who's like a headliner with television credits, decided I'm going to enter and steal this $1,000.
Right. Like a pool shark.
Yeah. And he went in and they let, first of all, I wouldn't even let this guy in. I'm like, oh, fuck you. You're not.
Yeah. You don't qualify.
Let the guy in. Sure enough, the guy wins the opening round. He wins the semifinal round. Finals night, come on. And in third place, it's Joe Pro, the comedian.
Oh, yay.
He won like $50, I think.
Oh,
and
good.
And the guy who won, if I had the worst comedy show, in the history of comedy shows.
You should do that.
I wouldn't book the guy who won to do 5 minutes for free on it. I would run away from this guy. It was a guy. I wouldn't piss on this guy if he was on fire.
Wow.
I thought of him. And he won the whole thing. And he beat the guy, the pro, got third place.
Unbelievable.
I'll tell you the names later. You guys, I'll tell later. The audience, so yes. Don't do contests. But you guys are in that in January.
And we're going to feel just terrible now if we win. We must have really sucked. We won.
But I don't think that one has guys. I mean, you guys might be the most professional guys in that. I mean, it is actually kind of a... I mean, it is for guys. It should be a guy who wins because you're going to have to go out to L.A. and go to the Ice House and wherever else they're booking.
Yeah, I'm far too old
Comedy
to win
and Magic
that thing,
Club.
Anyhow.
And no, you'll be good if you won. You'd be good if you won.
Yeah, I don't know.
You'd be good if you won.
Yeah, I'd love to win. But,
look, you can't expect the winning.
They aren't going to vote for the old guy.
I looked at most of the people that were getting through were good.
Yeah.
I wasn't looking around going, you shouldn't be through. Well, it wasn't like that.
The only reason I got in the thing is I was looking for stage time, and I heard what was going on.
Yeah.
And actually, I was on if somebody drops out, we'll let you in.
No, this is how you got into it. Joel, how do I get on this contest?
You said call
Talk
Bill.
To Bill. Talk to Bill.
I sent Bill a message. He said we're
exactly.
filled.
Yes.
And I said, okay. Exactly, I said, if somebody drops.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah, you got in.
And
I think you were the last beginner round, right? You were the last.
Yeah, yeah. He said, you're opening tomorrow. Yeah. I said, okay.
Good.
And just, I got the first spot, too.
Well, you did well. People like you. And one thing I'll tell you about contest is energy and likability. That's what you need.
Yeah,
that's what people, more than being funny, it's energy and likability.
You know,
when people are judging a contest, because when you tell an audience it's a contest, they look at it differently. Because comedy, and this is one thing, comedy is not a contest. It's not a competition. It is entertainment. You are there to entertain. If you get 10 minutes, be entertaining for 10 minutes.
Sure.
Don't try to blow the other guy off the stage.
Right.
Don't try, if you're the feature, don't try to blow the headliner away or make the MC look bad. If everyone's there, that's what it is for. But when you make it a contest and you tell people, the funniest man's going to win $1,000, then the audience goes, ooh, now I have to decide who I like more.
Yeah.
And there is a natural thing that audiences, and you hear them, I hear them at Comedy Castle all the time after the show. You know, the first guy I didn't like, or I like the second guy best. And I hear the conversations people have with their wives and stuff after.
Right.
But when you put people in that mindset, it ruins it.
Yeah.
Because then they go, oh, I don't know if I want to laugh.
Who do I want to help?
Yeah, who do I want to help? Who do I feel bad for?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's a lot of energy and likability. And Ted, you have those things, believe it or not.
I don't know. I saw myself do comedy for the first time. I saw the first film of me just a couple days ago. I don't even like me. And I watched it twice.
You're likable.
I'm kind of fatter than I thought, and I'm not that likable.
Yeah, we're all fatter than we think. But yeah, I mean, and you got that too, Steve. You've got a great pace. It's all jokes, all setups, it's all punchlines, which is what it should be.
Thank you.
It sounds professional, and so people react to that too.
Yeah.
So, that's another thing I think people get from the class. If you cut out the polling and the cheerleading and all that, you sound more professional.
I definitely got
and
that.
And people react to professionalism. And when I said, "Let's go to New Way Bar," The least professional venue in comedy professional. And that's what I tell my class. Let's go to New Way Bar and act professional. And look, I'm going to say this. I said this, I think, last class. But I think the next Joel Radio is going to review of Star Wars Rogue One. We're doing that this week on Thursday. But the next one is going to be live from the New Way Bar.
No.
Really?
Yeah,
no.
That's
no.
the
shit.
Plan. No. Now, it's the plan. It's the plan. Now, it's not going to be like I'm going to be sitting there at New Way Bar going, "Welcome to Joel Radio." I'm going to bring my field recorder.
You're just going
to
be surreptitiously
and we're
going to
be interviewing
recording?
The comics, and I'm going to do a set, and I'm going to write a new set. That's the plan. So if all goes to plan, because the New Way Bar has become this sort of legendary, like awful place.
Yes. Oh, for sure.
And I know that people that listen to the show who aren't in Detroit who can never go would enjoy hearing what goes on there. So
it's miserable.
I've still never done it. I avoided it. Imagine the worst set you've ever heard at the New Way Bar. Okay. Imagine you're listening to a podcast. You hear that set or a portion of that set, and then you hear me interview the guy after his set. How fun is that? Well, that'll be coming up here on this show. So that'll be your holiday.
You're killing at the New Way if they turn
that'll
their heads
the
and look towards you.
But you
don't expect any laughter ever.
What
ever.
I'm gonna say about New Way, and look, I may be the guy bombing, so I'm gonna bring a brand new set to that room as a science experiment. But when I taught the class, I said, let's go in there and be professional and treat it like it's a real show.
Right.
And the guys that come from the class almost always blow those other guys away at the New Way Bar because they treat it professionally.
Right.
And it's still people. People are still people. You know, when it's an audience, even if they're in a shithole.
Even if they're next door at the bar and you have to yell at them through the mic to get them to come
in. They will react to professionalism. It's not something they think about. It's unconscious. Yeah. They react to it. Right. Yeah. So that'll be the next show.
That sounds good.
That's the roadmap.
That
Star Wars
There's a challenge.
Review coming up after this show this week. Probably, if you're seeing Star Wars, check out drollradio.net. There'll be a review up. We're seeing the first show Thursday night, and then we're going to review it. So that'll be fun. Yeah. And then New Way will be probably a week after that. But anyway, let's move on to this because it's Christmas time. I like to talk about music on the show. I like to do my musical things. And I know, Ted, I did a show where I talked about my guilty pleasure playlist. And I was playing all the cheesy, like, 70s ballads, and you were saying, I like those songs.
I grew up with those songs. Yeah, I'm a child of the 60s and 70s.
So since it's...
And you're stealing all my music.
I'm not stealing your music. I'm bringing it to a new audience.
There you go.
What's wrong with that?
No, that's fine.
So I decided I would share with you my Christmas playlist. Oh, how's that sound?
That sounds great. Wow.
And some of this is real cheesy, too. Some of this is what I like, and some of this is cheesy. And you guys, certainly, you tell me if you like it. And then if you have something that you like, we'll try to play that, too. And what should I start with here?
You're going to start with...
I really don't like anything written after 1830.
I feel like...
Joel's sentimental, so it's going to be like another Auld Lang Syne.
Well, you know, Auld Lang Syne is a New Year's song.
Yeah.
By Dan Fogelberg.
Met My Old Lover.
Yeah, I played that. That's the song.
On Christmas Eve.
I'm My Lover. Okay, so maybe that is a little bit of...
Yeah.
Well, here's a cheesy...
Snow is Falling Christmas Eve.
All right, well, I guess... Okay, I'll start with something that's similar to that.
All right.
Here's a song that... And tell me if you recognize this out there. Here's a cheesy song that's kind of like that. You know this one? Ladies and gentlemen, we're here on Joel Radio. Listen to my favorite songs at Christmas time. We're going to have a little Kenny Loggins for you with Celebrate Me Home. Do you know this song? Listen to the first line whenever he gets to it.
Home
Kenny.
For the holidays.
The first line is Home for the Holidays. You don't know the song?
I don't know. Yeah. It's pretty, though.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's not even specifically Christmas, but it's become a Christmas song. I've seen interviews with Kenny where he talks about them.
I'd like to learn this song.
Yeah, it's nice. You could play this on the piano pretty easily. Yeah.
It's time I
found myself. It starts to swell when it gets to the chorus a little bit.
What's it called, Joel?
Celebrate Me Home. So this fits into that category. Cheesy.
Yeah, no, I like that. That's romantic.
No,
that's
he uses
cheesy.
To close the deal with a Match.com date.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, this
you sell it. We're in the car. Now you can celebrate.
You like
me
Christmas,
home,
baby?
Let's celebrate me home.
Well, this is something about you're traveling to get home for the holidays.
Yeah.
So if you think about that, you put yourself in that mindset. It's pretty. It's nice.
There's nobody at my home, Joel. This makes me sad.
Well, don't your kids come home to visit you?
The one's going to stop by for the day before she goes to South Carolina.
Wow, that's tragic.
Anyway, but let's talk about the classics. You got to have. I think this is a classic we can all enjoy. Of course, people that know this know I love the Beatles.
John Lennon, Merry Christmas, definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah,
you can't do better than
about
this.
That pleasure, though.
No, this is a New Day classic.
I love this, even though you hear a lot of Yoko on this, but it's still good. Yeah. Yoko can't even ruin this,
right?
And
do they even have Christmas in Japan? I don't even know.
I think they have Christmas in Japan.
I don't know.
Find out. You can't go wrong with John Lennon. It's always good.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'll even say I like Paul McCartney's Christmas song. Some people not on the same page.
I'm
no,
not on that page.
You say this sucks.
I'm not on that page.
I like this. I like this. Wow. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. And again, I think you have to Linda sing on this one, but still. Come on, wonderful Christmas.
Interesting music, but John had the lyrics. Paul had no lyrics.
No, Paul.
The mood is right.
Come on. Who doesn't get no?
No, I can't.
Oh, this is terrible. This is terrible. You know, interesting music. Lyrics are terrible.
I'd rather hear Mike Douglas sing Happy Birthday, Jesus. Than
well, that's on my playlist. And this is...
How's
now
that
this,
one?
Now, I'm going to tell you about this right here. I'm going to tell you about this.
Yeah.
Bruce Springsteen. Santa Claus is coming
good.
To town.
The boss. Had to make it to the boss.
Yeah, you're not going to Springsteen.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. I'm with you on this.
A lot of people don't realize this. Do you know how old this is, though? Do you know what year he recorded this?
73.
75.
Oh, really?
Right between the two. Yeah.
Born to Run Tour.
Really?
CW Post College in Long Island in December. And, he did this song.
Wow.
live, and it's just a killer.
A classic immediately.
And his version of Santa Claus, you know, that's the version when people do Santa Claus Come Down. They're all doing the Bruce version.
Yeah.
You know. And he tells a little story at the beginning and a little banter.
Yeah. Just love it when they talk at the beginning of songs.
This was the first ever live recording that Bruce Springsteen ever released.
Was it really?
And they didn't release this until like 77, 78.
Oh, all right.
So it was released later.
So that's why I picked that year.
See? Yeah, but it was recorded in 75. They were trying to make... And did you know who recorded? Jimmy Iovine.
Oh,
actually, he was the guy who recorded this.
Wow.
Live. But you know, they wanted to record a live album, so they taped this whole show. And the only thing that ever came out of it was this one.
No kidding.
And then Bruce, of course, did Merry Christmas, Baby some years later. He did this in 80, and it came out later. But, you know, you got to like this, too. I don't even know who does Merry Christmas, Baby besides
I don't either.
Bruce.
Merry Christmas, Baby?
Maybe. You don't know Merry Christmas, Baby?
No. I know Santa Baby.
Merry Christmas Baby right here. Come on. There you go. Ted likes it already.
Ted
Come
is
on.
Bopping for those of you who can't see him.
That's good music right there.
Yeah, I don't know this. I don't either.
I think it's almost as good as Santa Claus. Again, he does not
get it. Starts out with no
well,
singing.
It's live. Just,
yeah, all right. And I'm going to talk to you for a while.
Yeah, that's what Bruce does.
Because I'm Bruce.
Right.
It's actually, when you go see Bruce, he doesn't talk all that much.
Yeah.
But when he releases, like, a live thing, he's talking all the time. We'll let Bruce. I just want to say. That's a build-up.
Anticipation.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas, baby.
He plays the audience like a fiddle. That's
apparently. Listen to that response.
Now, he's recording this New Year's Eve, actually, if you want to know the backstory.
Oh, okay.
New Year's Eve 1980. Going in 1981.
Wow.
At the Nassau Coliseum. You can get this whole concert on his website. He released the whole concert now. Look.
His knowledge of Bruce Springsteen.
I think he's the head of the fan club.
I think he's a stalker.
Yeah. He was stalking him recently, too.
Do you think I don't own a copy of that show?
Does Springsteen have a restraining order with your name on it?
He does not.
Where is the blow-up Springsteen?
Now, you want to talk about classics.
Springsteen doll.
I think we can all agree, maybe the all-time Christmas classic right here. Phil Spector produced this one.
Oh,
The Wall of Sound.
Yeah. Baby, Please Come Home. Darlene Love.
Yeah.
This isn't Home Alone.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
This is way before your time, though, Joel, isn't it?
I don't care. It's good. That's what I'm telling you. Good song. I even listened to little Elton. You like Elton's Christmas song, Elton John? Step Into Christmas? No, not a fan. No
not
one's
sure
on board with this. I like this one.
Oh, wait, I know this. Yeah, I like this one okay.
It's all right.
Yeah,
come
I like this okay.
Get on board. Welcome to my Christmas song.
Yeah.
Sounds like an Elton John song.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's all
right. And then how about some other... icons? Stevie Wonder's had lots of Christmas stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of Stevie Wonder. Someday at Christmas. This is Someday at Christmas. Won't be
boys. Doesn't sound like Stevie.
That's little Stevie Wonder.
Yeah, about a little Stevie Wonder.
That sounds like kids play with
toys. That's not Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder.
Very young.
Yeah, it's young Stevie Wonder, but
like fingertips.
On the Motown label.
Someday at Christmas. There'll
be no Let me give you another.
From Saginaw, Michigan, Little Stevie Wonder.
Let me give you another. What about? Now this has the Motown sound.
Sounds like Cool Jerk.
Drug Brothers.
It does sound like that.
Cool Jerk. Tell me if this sounds. Oh, yeah. Candles burning low. This is what Christmas means to me. This doesn't sound like Stevie Wonder to you. Your hearing's going at your old age. Sounds exactly like Stevie Wonder.
But very young, right? Like what year?
Yeah, you're right. It's fingertips.
I'm not sure what era this is. Yeah, I think this is Motown as well. So
it's got to be
early,
before 67.
Early 70s, late 60s.
No, it's early 60s. Yeah. Early 60s. This is when Stevie was little.
Yeah.
This was little Stevie Wonder. Yeah.
But then there's bands that aren't known for being Christmas acts that I like a lot. And do the Christmas songs. Like here's the Ramones Christmas song. You ever heard that?
Oh.
Christmas.
Merry Christmas. I don't want to fight.
Oh, yeah.
Good song.
Yeah.
With Joey Ramone. Yeah, now we're rocking. Come on.
I love the Ramones.
Merry Christmas. I don't want to fight tonight. Merry Christmas. I don't want to fight tonight. Merry Christmas. I don't want to fight tonight.
Sounds good, right?
Yeah. He's singing that to Johnny.
Yeah, we're working our way down to the MC5.
Do they have Christmas songs?
I don't know.
They might. I don't know.
I don't know.
Then you've got, of course, you guys might know the Pogues Christmas song, Fairy Tale of New York. You know this?
No, I can't.
You should play this on the piano if you want to learn something. You don't know this? Bill Murray covered this on his Fairy Murray Christmas.
Oh, really?
Thing, which is awful, by the way. Yeah, by the way, let me talk about A Very Murray Christmas. I reviewed it last year. That fucking piece of shit. It's on Netflix. It's a goddamn piece of fucking shit. Fuck that thing. Don't watch it. He covers all his favorite Christmas songs. He has all these special guests. They're all singing Christmas songs. It's horrible.
God.
Jesus Christ, Bill. But just stick with the Pogues.
The drunk tank.
You don't know the Pogues? Kind of an Irish folk band.
Oh, I know the Pogues.
Pogues are good.
Shane McGowan.
Yeah.
I'm just way too old to know any of this stuff.
Pogues were big in the
80s. Yeah, they're big in the 80s.
Yeah, I was married in the 80s. I was listening to music. I was raising kids, for God's sake.
He was doing cocaine and wearing suspenders.
I was reading Dr. Seuss.
All right, how about, do we all know the Kinks, right? You're not too young for the Kinks, are you?
No, that was my era.
Kinks. Gotta love the Kinks. They do good
I didn't know they did Christmas.
You don't know the Kinks Christmas song?
I don't either.
Father Christmas.
I know a lot of Kinks songs, but not the Christmas songs.
That's the Kinks right there, isn't it?
Wow.
Dave Davies.
When I was small, I believed in Santa Claus, though I knew it was.
See, these are all great Christmas songs you're going to be listening to.
I've never heard this.
You should put the mixtape together for me, Joel.
I'm giving it to you.
Educate me.
I do the show, folks.
Yeah.
People like the music segments on the show. I love music. I used to have this whole room used to be CDs back before it was streaming. It's a good Kinks song too, right?
Yeah, it is good.
Yeah, Kinks are always good.
Now here you go. There's a guy who's not known for doing Christmas music. A little funky Christmas for you.
James Brown?
James Brown.
Santa Claus.
I'll just let him tell you the name.
Go straight to the ghetto.
Yeah, that's what it's called. Santa Claus goes straight to the ghetto.
Go straight to the ghetto.
I think there's a whole James Brown Santa Claus.
Now this is
Christmas CD, so you can get that.
Oh, this good. I really
Isn't
like
this. Good? Yeah, this
I would play this. Yeah, this is coming home with me.
I'm behind this.
Yeah,
it's a good song, right?
Yeah.
Leave a toy for Johnny.
So James Brown's a hit.
All right.
What about
that's 1 out of 12.
Child of the 80s here. You might remember The Pretenders.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know The Pretenders Christmas song? It's sitting right here. It's called 2,000 Miles.
Oh, yeah, sure. I've heard this one. Da-da-da-da-da.
You could probably play this.
Can you sing, Joel?
Oh, no. Not I can. Not well. Chrissy Hynde for you.
Yeah, I remember this one.
I'm a fan of this.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I'm a fan. Other band not knowing. Now, this is a cover. This next thing. Where's that at?
The snow's falling down.
Scrolling and scrolling. Now, this is one of my favorite bands. When I was a young man, Oasis does a Christmas song. Now, this is a cover of a Slade song. Slade wrote this Christmas.
Oh, really? A Slade Christmas song?
Yeah. Merry Christmas, everybody. Noel singing this one, too. Not even Liam. You get Noel.
It's the time.
You an Oasis fan?
I like a lot of their stuff, yeah.
The documentary's very good.
Yeah, I've seen the documentary.
Supersonic. Yeah.
I have seen that, yeah.
It's good.
Does he ride a red nose?
But you get the Slade version. It's a little heavier.
Noel sure is.
I think Noel's got a sweet voice that I like.
I like this. I've never heard it.
So here it is. Merry Christmas, everybody.
nice little chipper.
That's good, yeah.
Now, I don't even know who these guys are, but apparently if you live in England, this is a big Christmas.
Pink Floyd? Oh.
It's a band called Wizard.
Wizard?
With two Z's.
Never heard of them.
Visitor Wizard.
I don't know, but I found this on one of those best Christmas song lists.
Oh, yeah.
And I dug it. I listened to it. Wizard, I wish it could be Christmas every day. What else do I got for you here? Somebody else not known for doing Christmas songs? I believe this was him solo, and he just passed away this week. But Greg Lake.
Oh.
From Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
So what's this, 8 minutes long?
Yeah, probably.
Where's the keyboard solo?
I believe in Father Christmas, so...
He passed away this
passed
week.
Passed away this week, yeah. Greg Lake, yeah. Had cancer. Very sad. But people know this song, even if they don't know it's Greg Lake, you know, right?
Right. Well,
and then I got some sort of novelty kind of Christmas songs for you. And then a couple more guilty pleasures. Here's your novelty songs. You gotta love this one. If you watch the Charlie Brown Christmas, Christmas time is here.
Yes. The Vince G.
Yeah, the Vince Giraldi Trio, yeah.
Yeah, I have the CD.
Yeah, very good.
Oh, this is just sad, though.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Here's another novelty thing I found.
I'm going to go home feeling sorry for myself.
This is the Soul Saints Orchestra. I don't know what that is, but they
sounds
released...
Sounds Caribbean.
It's got kind of a James Brown
feel. Yeah, it does have a James Brown feel.
This is Santa's Got a Bag of Soul. I like this.
Like Archie Bell and the Grills.
Yeah, I like Archie Bell and the Grills.
So do I, yeah. Everybody know. That's good. What
time it is, right?
Yeah, that's good. People get
it down. Which I knew what album.
That's a dirty, funky.
Yeah. People
get it down. From Houston.
It's
from an album called The Christmas Groove. It's a variety, you know, various artists.
I just imagine hearing that in a bar, I'd get the shit kicked out of me.
Yeah, pretty much.
1972.
Where you should be. Yeah. Why am I here? Can we dance with your dates?
Yeah, right.
It isn't a Tarantino movie.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly.
This is one of my favorite Christmas songs. This is an old R&B vocal group from the 50s called The Youngsters. Christmas kind of a doo-wop R&B. It's called Christmas in Jail. I love this. Ain't got no bail. I was in the wrong lane, feeling no pain. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, good song, right?
Yeah.
Guys, too much to drink, and you spend Christmas in jail.
I feel like Johnny Cash should have done a song.
I know,
like,
I know.
Jail at Christmas.
Yeah. Say I'm lucky to be
alive. That one's got some sirens in it. Merry Christmas. This mix. Happy New
Year. They're singing. Spare no expense.
But this sounds like an old record.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
But I love it.
It's good. They give me
bread and water. Oh, good song. Anyway, and then
to be on 78.
Christmas 78.
Christmas. No one will know what that is.
Where's the gramophone?
Right, now this one I like. Now, got rocks in my head. If I was gonna sing one of these. And then this I forgot about this band. I can't forget about this. Another child of the 80s. You'll know this. This is about the only song you'll know from this band. Maybe. Some people would only know this. This is The Waitresses.
Oh, I know The Waitresses.
They had a couple.
I know what Boys Like.
I know what Boys Like. Okay, people might know that New Wave, right? Yes. This New Wave.
It was the theme song to the TV show Square Pegs.
There it is. But this is their Christmas song. It's called Christmas Rapping. I'm getting a phone call. We don't want that. But let's listen to The Waitresses. I just have to turn your phones off. I can't play my goddamn music. You don't know this one? Come on, Steve knows.
I do know this. Yeah.
It's another song about, like, I was going to be alone on Christmas.
Right.
And then a guy hit on me, and now everything's great. You could do this song now. Yeah. There's no consent in that song. Yeah, I am outraged that a woman would need a man's validation to have a good Christmas. Bah, humbug, that's too strong, 'cause it is my favorite holiday. But all this year's been a busy. See, it's Christmas rapping because he's rapping, but it's called W-R.
Oh, that's clever.
Wow. It's a pun.
Wow, that's clever.
connections left from last year.
It's a good song, though, right?
Yeah.
If you only have to listen to it once, it's a great song.
It's Christmas classic. See, that's the first verse is chorus. Christmas by myself this year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then she starts getting into, oh, a guy called me. Oh, look at this. Now Christmas is great.
Yeah. Picture frozen landscape, chill this room for 24 days. Evergreen, sparkling snow, get this winter over with. Flashback to springtime, saw him again. Would have been good to
see,
go
she,
for
springtime,
lunch.
She's having a good time with this guy.
Yes. We tried,
we sent, we she sounds like twins. Yeah. They doubled her voice or something. I don't know. Summertime. Out to the beach
to his boat. Could I join him? No. This rap music is over his head.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
Hip-hop doesn't do it for me, Ted.
I don't like the hip-hop.
I don't know.
It's like 1983. This is not like...
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, listen to that song when you get home. And then if I guess I had to say the two real... Now, look, you don't have to say this is a guilty pleasure to like Dolly Parton, because certainly she's a legend. But this song is all for the chicks right here. You might know this one. It was from The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, which is a musical.
I know the movie and the play.
And she sings about how sad she is at Christmas, another sad Christmas. But I would sing that. Actually, I'd sing Bruce,
until
but
Santa
I'd sing
brought
it.
Her a breast augmentation, and then she was all happy again.
This is what all women would do, you know.
Maybe I'll move somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get a car. Maybe I'll drive so far.
But I like this.
I've never heard this.
You've never heard Hard Candy Christmas?
No.
Cindy Lauper and Alison Krauss, you ever heard of this?
Maybe she'll buy a car.
Yeah.
Do you watch a lot of Lifetime movies, Joel?
Only when I'm on my period. Maybe I'll just get to say, it's a guilty pleasure. God forbid you open yourself up and reveal something.
I have no soul.
Do we have to be here while you're guilty?
I feel like a lot of guilty pleasures have taken place in this room.
Yeah,
I know. I don't want to be here anymore.
Oh, please. It's a fabulous studio.
Why is there duct tape over there?
Right. And then I will say the most guilty of all pleasures is this, because, look, I'll be honest with you. This comes on the radio, and you know, because sometimes I'm just driving and I put the Christmas station on.
Yeah.
And then this comes on, and I go, I should change it, but it's snowing, and it's and I don't want to reach for the thing.
Suddenly it's
and
too
God hard. Damn it, I enjoyed... What was voted, I believe this was voted on Jezebel, the website, because I looked it up when I wanted to know who sang it.
Right.
It was voted the worst Christmas song of all time by the readers of Jezebel. It's called The Christmas Shoes.
By the readers of Jezebel.
By New Song. Well, they voted it the worst. Almost Christmas time. Because it is a Christian Christmas song.
Oh, my God. You can't have that.
And I actually...
How did they put those two together?
I actually enjoy this. I'm really in the because Christmas mood. Standing right. Listen to the story. Listen, my audience. Little boy waiting anxiously. Oh, so sad. Pacing round like my well up.
I'm getting for clamps. Hands he held a pair of shoes.
And his clothes were pretty papers.
Wow.
So there's a little poor boy who has trying to buy some shoes.
Does he play the drum? Is he a drummer
well,
boy?
It's not far from that.
I couldn't believe this song makes me feel like converting to Judaism. Sir, I want to buy these shoes. I don't think the Jews are this sad on Christmas, are they?
I don't. That's good enough.
They're just
Jesus.
Having Chinese food and watching movies. I don't wow.
But I actually, the kid, little boy, is trying to buy his mom some shoes on Christmas, and he doesn't have the money. And
wow.
And I think the end chorus, it sort of the fade is, if Jesus is kind to us tonight. Or something, that's sort of how it goes there. It goes all full Monty religion.
Wow.
It's a
full wacko Christian.
Melancholy Christmas
I like
for Joel.
It. I like it. But I like some of that stuff's upbeat.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I like the James Brown stuff.
I'm a full stuff. Human being. Yeah, I have ups and downs, Ted. Sometimes I'm... Maybe I'll drive wow. somewhere.
I take medicine like so I don't have to be that way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's parts of you I don't want to know about, Joel.
Wow, yeah.
Reveal all.
Wow.
Maybe I'll spend Christmas alone.
Again.
But yeah, that's my. What do you guys like for Christmas music? What did I miss here? Come on.
I'm just a traditionalist, man. I just like old stuff. Yeah.
You like the Sinatra, the Bing Crosby.
I like that stuff. Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's actually one song that was my family's big song. It was
what
Mary's
was
Boy Child by Jim Reeves, who was a country singer with a great voice.
Mary's Boy Child?
Yeah.
Mary's Boy
Harry
Child.
Harry Belafonte wrote it.
Really?
Yeah, he performed.
And who's
it in
the
early
version
60s.
That does it the best?
This is not a rap song.
Jim Reeves. It's just a Jim Reeves. He's a country singer.
I have Harry Belafonte doing it.
Yeah, he wrote it, so he performed it too.
But the Jim Reeves version, I don't know if I can find that. Maybe if I type in Jim Reeves.
You know, but I'm just a traditionalist.
Give you Harry.
Well, we used to go caroling. We used to sing all the songs door to door because people really did that back in the day.
Here's Placido Domingo doing it. How's that?
Oh, that's way different. That's not even going to be the same. Yeah, that's... So the Holy Bible says, yeah, that's not even what I'm thinking about. So.
Yeah, this is where Steve lives, right here.
Como se dice?
All right.
Even Harry Heller Belafonte's version is real calypsoed out.
Oh, is it really?
No, it's bueno.
Was it Jim Reeves?
Yeah.
Well, I'm using Google Play.
It's probably hard. It's really hard to find, I think.
We
had it on a record we got from a Firestone.
Long time
there it is.
Ago.
Hey! Hey! I can do a show.
That's it. Wow. I like Jim Reeves' voice a lot.
Yeah.
Mary's boy child, Jesus Christ,
this was, our family
was born on Christmas Day.
All right. It's no Christmas in jail, but it's okay.
Hear the angels sing.
This guy can sing.
New kings born today. And man will.
It's like a rock and roll song for a church. You're in church. This is really rock.
Right, what Christmas song do you want? Come on.
Trumpet sound.
Me?
Yeah, what do you want to hear? What Christmas song do you like?
Please Come Home for Christmas.
Oh, I played that already. Darling Love.
No. The Eagles?
The Eagles. Yeah, I don't know if that's on here.
Or Do They Really Know It's Christmas, I think?
Oh, that one? The live band?
Yeah. Band-Aid.
Dude, that's actually not bad either.
I like that.
Do they know it's not? They redid that over the years, so I got to find the original.
The original, I think, had Boy George and
Bob Geldof
Sting and had,
I think this is it right
Bono
here. Right?
And they flew everybody in to do one line.
This is it right here, yeah.
Yeah, I like this. There's no need
to be afraid. Feed the world.
Right.
This is a good song. I like this.
Yeah. Well, I think it's
all right.
I think it's true.
Yeah.
I think it's, we're doing all this and there's people that are suffering.
A little Boy George for you right now. That's right.
Yeah,
that's
like
Boy George right there.
Yeah. Actually, he was in my son's bar last summer. Wow.
What kind of bar was that your son was at?
The Evil Olive in Chicago.
Yeah, this is a good song. I like your pick. Good.
Thanks. Pray for the other ones at Christmas time. I like the classic too. I like Elvis. Like Blue Christmas.
Well, I have this one on mine. Yeah, I love this. I like this. I mean, this guy, great voice.
I like Bowie and Crosby doing Little Drummer Boy. Because Bowie's in it.
I actually like Bing Crosby's White Christmas.
Yeah, so do I.
You recognize who this is? I got his Christmas album. And I brought some comb for popping. The lights they are turned way. Rock and roll icon.
Oh, wait. Let it snow. It's Rod Stewart.
It's Rod Stewart doing Let It Snow. That's a good. I have that on my playlist. All right, that's enough Christmas. Thank you. If you want some good Christmas suggestions, now you've got them.
I know.
Christmas in jail.
Plenty, soul in jail.
Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto.
Yeah, there's some funky shit in there.
Good stuff in there.
We
didn't
hear that sexy one about the girl, Santa come up the Christmas tree or whatever it is. What is the, Santa Baby. Santa Baby.
Madonna does a version of that. Yeah
there was a sexier version before Madonna.
Yeah, I'm not into that.
That song's annoying.
I'll do what I like.
It's my show.
Give you some Beatles, give you some rap a little bit there, Christmas rapping, some new wave, the Pogues, the Ramones. I mean, come on. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, let's give you some more good stuff. We'll give you some stuff to watch, and then we'll get out of here. I got my, I think I printed this out. Did I print out my movies and TV stuff? I did, yeah. Saw a movie. I rented this movie. It's terrible. I'll give you two movies.
We're going to talk about Westworld, and I know you're a Westworld fan.
I've talked about it on a previous show. Did you see the end, though? It was great, right?
Oh, yeah. I thought
it was
fantastic.
Westworld was good.
Yeah,
I'm excited for more.
It was great.
They did a good job with that.
Real good job.
Yeah. The guy who created that is Jonathan Nolan, who's brothers with Christopher Nolan. The director did Inception, and he wrote a lot of his
movies. And a lot of
too,
famous actors and actresses. I mean, that black guy was he's big on Broadway. I mean, there's a lot of real famous people in that thing.
Jeffrey Wright.
And the neat thing about that show is, even if they kill him off, they can bring him back.
Yeah, it's a good
thing. And so even if they kill the humans off, they can bring him back as robots.
Yeah, Westworld was great. It ended last week, and it was terrific. So, yeah, I loved Westworld. But here's something. Well, let's talk about the movie, and we'll get into some streaming, because I'm going to save the best for last, I think, when it comes to that. But I watched a movie that came out this summer that was supposed to be a big summer hit. Now, I looked it up. It made $400 million and was considered a flop.
Wow.
Because it made a lot of the money in China. And that was the Warcraft movie. The Warcraft movie. Now, that's based on a video game called Warcraft, which I actually don't play. I actually like video games, but Warcraft's not something I play. But it was directed by a guy named Duncan Jones. And I'll tell you about Duncan Jones. He's a director. He made two previous feature movies, one called Moon, which starred Sam Rockwell, which was kind of a very like Stanley Kubrick-esque story of a guy on the moon, which is great.
Never seen it. Moon, fantastic.
Huh. Great science fiction, little indie movie.
Right.
He made a movie called Source Code, which was a slightly larger movie, which had Jake Gyllenhaal in it and Michelle Monaghan, and it was a time travel, Twilight Zone,
that sounds
sci-fi
familiar.
Thing where a guy had to kind of relive this day to prevent a terrorist attack.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was sent from the future to prevent a terrorist attack on a subway.
Right.
And it was this great, and two great sci-fi movies, and Duncan Jones. Duncan Jones is the son of David Bowie.
Oh.
And yeah, he made these two great movies. He's a movie director now.
Wow,
and
I didn't know that.
Warcraft, when that came out, I said, would love to see Warcraft by Duncan Jones. Yeah. And it came out in the theater and got like almost completely negative reviews. So I didn't go to the theater, but I rented it at home and I watched it. And I wouldn't even recommend renting it, but here's the thing. All right. So I have the 4K television. I have the UHD Blu-ray. I have the surround sound with the subwoofer. And if you're going to see Warcraft, that's a pretty good way to see it.
Yeah,
so I enjoyed it for that. I actually rented the UHD Blu-ray.
High quality crap.
Lots of booms and effects and beautiful visuals. So I enjoyed Warcraft for that. But they just do stuff that, because even like ILM, the guys who do Star Wars, they did the CGI, so it's great.
Okay.
But, you know, it's a war between humans and orcs. And the orcs have these giant, like, fangs that come out. So, and most of them are CGI, but then they have one woman, this actress Paula Patton, who's like a half orc, half human, and she's like painted green. And they gave her, like, these prosthetic teeth. Uh-huh. Well, she can barely talk.
Oh, wow.
She's like, and I'm like, she can barely fucking talk.
Oh, that's so hot.
So it's
that
terrible.
Is hot.
Well, you would like her because she's barely
speech
dressed.
Speech impediment?
And
yeah.
She's got these giant, it's ridiculous. There's a baby orc that's key to the story, which is you can only laugh at the baby orc. Because it's like this CGI little thing, and it's got orc teeth, but it's so weird. And obviously, the source material, a video game, is not that deep to make a feature film out of.
Why are you watching this movie to start with? I mean, you don't play the game.
I just told you. It's a great director. He's David Bowie's son, and I liked his previous movies, and I'd give him a shot.
Yeah.
And it was terrible, but it looked good on my big screen.
Oh, yeah. He pulled up a picture of an orc. And,
now imagine if you bring up Paula Patton from that. It's like a green half lady, half orc. Maybe you can find her picture. Yeah, terrible movie.
She's probably a biter.
I don't recommend it, but it's if you had to. I mean, Paula Patton's good looking if you just look up her. But did you find her?
Oh, she's kind of hot.
Yeah, is she a half orc there? Do you see her the orc teeth?
Yeah.
It's not good.
I don't need her to talk a lot.
Yeah, but imagine her trying. She's not a great actress, and imagine her trying to talk. It's a train wreck.
Yeah.
And you don't even really recognize anyone else in this movie. I don't think Glenn Close has a cameo.
It looks like there's a lot of people who aren't real people.
Yeah, that's the thing. They got guys to do motion cap, and there is some humans, but you don't even know who those guys are.
Yeah, they're
there's
all
there's a guy
disguised.
Named Dominic. What's the guy's name? Dominic West, I think is that. I forget the guy's name. But there's an actor.
Dominic West. He was on The Wire.
I forget his name. Look, you can look it up. It's not that good. So Warcraft, you can skip. But if you want something to make your subwoofer rattle the walls, which it did.
That's your choice.
Yeah, I think Warcraft is a good, some good demo. Well, last time I told you to watch The Shallows, which was another great movie if you want. But that was good junk. This is kind of junk.
Junk, okay.
But I think because it made so much money in China, though, from what I read,
yeah,
they're going to make a Warcraft 2. So there you go.
There you go. Wow.
There you go.
It's
Chinese
all about the
it.
Money.
Well, look, if you're in China,
yeah,
you don't know what this fucking lady's saying anyway with
right.
the buck teeth.
Right.
Who gives a shit?
Right.
Ging, gong, ging, gong, ging. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah,
they
yeah.
dub it in, and who gives a shit?
Yeah, it's all about
their lips
the money.
Like they look like the lips match and everything.
Yes.
So skip that one. Now, the next thing I'm going to talk about is Tickled, which is a documentary. It's just called Tickled. It is about a documentary about a guy found, there's an investigative reporter in New Zealand. And this viral, this, are you looking up Tickled?
Yeah, it looks like a nerd.
He's fact checking.
Like
it's a guy. Yeah. He's an investigative reporter. And there's a clip that goes viral of competitive tickling. And it's all... younger yes. college age man
upon it, apparently.
And he stumbles upon this video of competitive tickling, and he's an investigative reporter. And he goes, it'd be a good story to figure out who's making these competitive tickling videos. Well, the next thing you know, he's in the United States trying to hunt down who had this competitive tickling
the
website.
Deep dark underground of competitive
and,
tickling.
Yes.
And
no, sorry, we just do snuff films.
Well,
we don't
because
know.
What he finds out is
we won't tickle him.
There are gay overtones to the competitive tickling videos.
I can imagine
really?
Under the right
and it sort of leads him to the studio where they're making these competitive tickling. Well, no one really wants to talk.
I'm kind of interested.
Why does
in
no one want to talk about competitive tickling?
I've got to see this
and
movie.
And it starts to get layers and layers. It gets deeper and deeper.
Really?
Now that's
and it goes very, very deep, and it sort of becomes, it's kind of a Michael Moore sort of investigative format.
Oh,
it's one of those kind of,
me.
It's one of those, it's one of those documentaries where it's like, we're going to show up and catch this guy at the door and interview him about what he's up to, and it almost gets to where, and I like Tickled, it's not going to be in my best movies of the year, I don't think, but it was a good documentary.
Where'd you see it? Netflix?
You have to rent it. This is one, it'll probably be on Netflix eventually, but you rent it on Amazon or something for like $6.
It's a doc?
It's a documentary
based on something
movie. Yeah, it's a true story, and it's a
people
documentary.
Really have competitive
you
tickling?
You have to watch this
How
movie.
How do you win?
Well, that I don't know.
Death.
But I'm telling
when
you, this
die,
guy from New Zealand,
it's,
I don't want to give any spoilers because things get layers and it goes back to the 80s and somebody was making tickling videos in the 80s. And who was that person? And
Howard Stern. He's got this seat. I've
it's
seen
all,
this.
You got to see. You got to see this. It's crazy.
Oh, the tickle chair on Howard Stern.
But
yeah.
It's okay. Let's just say this reporter from New Zealand, he immediately goes, I think, somewhere in the Bay Area to find this.
That sounds
he
right.
ends up in Muskegon, Michigan.
No.
And I don't want to say
no.
anymore.
The headquarters
wow.
of tickling
ends up in
of the,
Muskegon,
of the world is awesome. Muskegon,
and you
Michigan.
Have to watch it. I don't want to ruin anything more.
Tickle capital.
My biggest complaint about it is it's so seedy and so kind of creepy.
That's why I want to see it.
And I almost want to say that the reporter... You almost start to have sympathy for the subjects rather than the reporter at a certain point.
Really?
Because the reporter is
so
pushy.
Warped
he's
getting into it.
Well, he's so up everyone's ass that it's almost like...
Probing is relentless.
Yeah, I almost started to feel sympathy for the subjects of the investigation rather than the investigator, even though I wanted to know more. And you learn it all. You learn it all. So don't read too deep. If you want to see Tickled, don't read too deep.
But it's going to be on Netflix.
It will be, but if you've got Amazon or something, you can rent it.
I definitely want to see that.
Yeah, you should rent it.
I have on demand.
It's on your on demand, but you have to pay for it. It's not free. It's probably $5 or $6.
Sounds like 60 minutes going after.
It's kind of
I might be moving.
It's like one of those Michael Moore movies. So if you want to see Tickled, it's worth a look.
I had no idea what was going on in Muskegon.
Yeah,
I didn't either.
It's
who knew?
It's
it'll be on the water tower pretty soon. Tickle capital.
If you look
tickle
up,
me
you know,
in. Tickle me in.
I don't know what the Metacritic is for this, but it's probably in the 80s or 90s. It's a critically acclaimed documentary. I just thought for me it was a little too uncomfortable. It might not be for everybody, but if you like, I mean,
I got a pretty high threshold
well,
for that. So,
Ted's a complete dirtbag.
Well, I won't.
So
I won't watch
Ted
it with my kids.
Yeah, exactly. Watch it alone. Okay, watch it alone.
Don't, with a you and a feather.
No,
just watch the movie together.
Tickled. It's on anywhere you rent movies. It's on your on demand. It's on your iTunes. It's on your Hulu, your Vudu. It's
I'm
on your
get Ted
Amazon
a feather
Prime.
Duster for Christmas.
Feather of your choice. Pick a feather, any feather at all.
And then I'm going to review a couple of streaming shows here on the Netflix right now. They debuted this past week. One of them is called The White Rabbit Project. It's the old Mythbusters build team. So if you guys remember Mythbusters, which which I loved Mythbusters, it was the other three, not Jamie and Adam. It was the other
They're
guys.
Competitors.
No, it was there were two teams on Mythbusters. There was the Jamie Adam team, and then there was the other three, which were kind of the younger team. It was Carrie, Grant, and Tori. Well, they were removed from the last season of Mythbusters, and now Mythbusters is no more. I think they're going to make a new Mythbusters with new people, but Mythbusters, they sort of unceremoniously fired these guys from Mythbusters. I think largely because they shot a cannonball through somebody's house.
They frown on that.
Yeah, I think that's going to get removed from Discovery Channel. But anyway, but they've been kicking around reality TV and stuff, and Netflix gave them their own show, which is kind of similar to Mythbusters, which they, in the first one, the only one that I watched, there's 10 episodes, they're all up now, they're about 45 minutes each. The first one I watched was, can you create superpowers, like comic book powers?
Oh.
Can you shoot lightning from your fingertips? Can you become invisible? Can you do mind control? And they test these things, and it was okay. It was kind of like Mythbusters. I like Mythbusters. I guess I'll watch more of these, but it also felt like something you could see on YouTube.
Yeah.
It kind of felt like there's guys in the garage making these.
Right, yeah.
And granted, like, it's 4K. It looks wonderful.
Right.
They did a nice job. And it's those people you like from TV, but it wasn't Mythbusters. It wasn't that good. So, in a way, I kind of felt about like I felt about. Well, I thought the Grand Tour was actually really good. I don't know if you guys Top Gear fans. Anyone watch Top Gear?
I know of it. I have.
Yeah, Top Gear, great show from England, and they got thrown off the BBC, and now they're doing their show on Amazon. It's called The Grand Tour.
Okay,
it's basically Top Gear. I reviewed it last week, but you know, and that's kind of the similar theme. I think it's like, hey, you liked that show? We're gonna call it something else, bring in the same people, and try to do the same show. And to me, it didn't really quite work as well as the Grand Tour worked from being Top Gear. But if you liked Mythbusters Build Team, there's 9 other episodes. So
there you go.
Go give that a shot. I thought it was all right. And then the other new Netflix original. Now, this is a documentary series. So they're doing, I think, 8 episodes. They're all standalone. You can watch them in any order you want. But they're all on the same topic. The show is called Captive. And it's true stories of people who were held captive.
Oh, wow.
In various scenarios. It's all true life stories.
Wow.
A lot of it, I watched the first one. The first one is about a prison uprising. And they talk to the guards that were held captive, the prisoners that did the uprising, the warden, all the police that were involved, and they all give interviews, and they do a lot of reenactments, and there's a lot of footage.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah, and it's great.
That sounds really
cool. It is so tense. These are an hour long each.
Yeah.
And
I'll watch that.
It was produced by a guy named Simon Shin. Now, that may not mean much to you, but if you watch a lot of documentaries, I'll give you, he's the producer. Now, apparently they used a different director on each of these, but he is, thematically, they're similar because they're all on the same topic. But this guy, Simon Shin, here's some documentaries he produced. If you watched any of these were all great, and they all came out in the last 5 years. Project Nim, the documentary about the first talking chimp, which was fantastic. Man on Wire, the documentary about the guy who climbed between the World Trade Center towers.
Yeah, yeah.
Great documentary. He produced that. Searching for Sugar Man was another Simon Shin documentary.
Sure.
And The Imposter, which was amazing. If you saw The Imposter, about a guy who shows up somewhere and says, my name is so-and-so, and I was kidnapped in Texas. A guy calls the police in Paris and says, I was kidnapped from my home in Texas when I was 12 years old, and I just got free of my captors. And it goes from there. The Imposter is an amazing documentary.
Wow.
But Simon Shin produced all of these.
Okay.
And now he's producing Captive, and I watched it last night, and it was so great.
Wow.
And I watched the one about the prison uprising in Ohio.
Yeah.
And if you like documentaries,
I do.
Boy. And people love those Netflix originals. Some people don't even have cable.
Yeah.
They got to watch everything on Netflix. And if you like, you know, documentaries, and I do, I always review... I mean, when I do my best movies of the year, I have a section that's just for documentaries.
Yeah.
I'll review 20 documentaries a year.
Or if you're a fan of John McCain, will probably be on that, won't he?
Well, I don't know. You know, I don't know if it's going to be Prisoners of War. I haven't gotten this far into it. I think the next one's about a Coca-Cola executive who was kidnapped in Brazil, which is, you know, a lot of these are going to be famous stories that you've heard about.
Sure.
The prison thing was a big story in 93.
Or
but,
the Hearst girl.
She might be in it, too. I don't know. I haven't seen. But they're all on different topics. It's called Captive. It's on Netflix. I think it's the best thing I've watched since I talked to you last. And I only got to watch one because it only came out like Friday. So watch Captive. It's fantastic.
That sounds great.
I've got a girl in my basement they might want to interview.
Yeah, Ted's just looking for tips.
No, I mean, well, look, I mean, if you wanted to watch one of these with a date.
Yeah.
God, I don't even know what you'd fucking watch with a date.
Yeah. Take your handcuffs off first.
Well, I mean, let's say you go... Let's watch Tickled.
Yeah,
right? She might think you're a creep.
Yeah, no.
If you say, let's watch this documentary about guys being kidnapped.
Yeah.
Well, some people are comparing Tickled to, what was it last year, Making a Murderer. Even though Making a Murderer was one story over 10 hours, this is different stories over 10 hours.
Yeah.
It's kind of there, because Making a Murderer came out about this time last year. I thought Making a Murderer, by the end of it, I was bored with it. Mm-hmm. And I thought the guy killed those people, so I was not really a big fan of Making a Murderer. But Captive is terrific. But if I had to recommend something, I don't know. I guess I'd recommend Imposter's great. Yeah, Imposter's great. Or Project Nim is great. A lot of people didn't see that. I don't know where you see that now, but look that up. It's about a chimp that they talk, and
I think I've seen this.
Project Nim, yeah. It's a documentary.
There's a lady that works with this chimp and teaches them.
Yeah, it's great. I don't want to ruin Project Nim for anyone, but
Tell us what the chimp said. I mean, it's just
Well, he's
they end up dating. It's real. It's a romance. It's
just like, oh, I love a Project Nim.
It's on Lifetime. It's one of
but when I found out that Simon Shin produced it, I go, I'm in.
Yeah, I'm
in for that.
He's in for Shin.
Great. I'm in for Shin.
Yeah.
Shin. Simon Shin is his name. It's an English guy. He's not Chinese or nothing.
Oh.
Thanks for clarifying. I know, not to be racist, but
several people said they'll now watch it. Thanks for that clarification.
So that's what I got for movies and TV this week. So anything else? Now, anything else you guys watch?
I saw Gimme Danger, the Stooges documentary.
Oh, how was that?
Was
I would have seen that.
Fantastic.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Jim Jarmusch directed that?
That's correct. It was at the Magic Bag on Friday night, and I loved it because I'm a huge Stooges
fan. Did you ever read Detroit Rock City, the history of Detroit rock and roll?
Yep.
Did you know that
Steve Miller? Right?
You know that Steve Miller is my good friend.
I did not know that.
Did you know that he wrote a book about the Insane Clown Posse and their fans called Juggalo that is on my shelf that I have 4 pages dedicated to me in? Did you know that?
No, I didn't. But way to make it about yourself.
When you bring up the Stooges, I bring up that book because that's probably the best book about one of the better books.
Yeah,
because I know one of the Ashtons wrote a book. I think. Right?
Yeah. I have an Iggy biography. I don't remember who wrote it. I don't think it was one of the Ashtons.
Steve's been on the show many times. A couple times. Yeah, Steve's a good friend of mine.
Because he wrote
a book that I'm in, I guess we became friends doing that.
Wow. Yeah, that'll help.
I want to see that. Now, where do you see that? I know that played at like the DFT.
The thing, it was like three places. I know the DFT, then the Michigan Theater Ann Arbor, and then they had this showing at the Magic Bag.
And they do it for like one night or
I don't know what else they're planning to do.
A lot of times those, like the Oasis documentary, which I rented for like $6, that showed like one night at the Main Art Theater.
Right.
You know, so some of these you see them once and then they're on video.
But I mean, I would buy it in a second if it was.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. I like the Stooges a lot, and of course Detroit.
Yeah, I know.
The history of Detroit. I mean, if you want to hear a good show, when I interviewed Steve Miller, I can get you the link, but it's on the I interviewed Steve Miller about that book and about Detroit rock and roll for like 2 hours.
Right.
And he told me every story about every club and all the guys.
Cool.
And I think the only guy that wouldn't talk to him was Seeger. So
really?
He interviewed in person, you know, Iggy, Alice, the Living Stooges, Living MC5, Patti Smith, all those people. I mean, even who was the guy? Johnny Thunders lived in Detroit for a while.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. That's why I read his book, and it was outstanding. So, Detroit Rock City, I'll recommend that if you see Give Me Danger. That's
sure.
Good recommendation.
Iggy's interviewed a lot, and
he's good?
So funny. He's just so naturally funny. You know? I like
that scene. I wish that was around. I mean, I lived.
Me too, man.
I mean, I lived through the garage rock revival.
So did I.
Which was the 2000s, you know, and I was in 2000? I was 28. But I was there for those early White Stripe shows before they broke.
Oh, okay.
You know, I was at those. I was at the Magic Bag.
Right.
And at, what was the place in Detroit? They talk about it in the Cass Corridor. Fuck, I can't remember. The Gold Dollar.
Used to
go to the Gold Dollar and the Magic Stick and all those places that all those, the Detroit rock and roll bands. And I saw, you know, I saw the Strokes before their first album came out. And I got to hang out with those guys.
Right.
You know, I was friendly with them for a minute before they became big time. So I lived through all that.
Well,
there
was more of a, I'm older, so there was more of a punk scene that I saw.
Yeah, see, I was too old for the punk scene. You know. I lived through grunge and I lived through garage rock.
Yeah, yeah.
I was on the ground floor of all of those, you know? So, it was good.
I remember when they invented music. Long ago.
Rock Around the Clock came out, Ted, tell us about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, rock and roll has got to go.
Actually, in the late 60s, early 70s, there was a lot of music around here. There was a lot of free concerts. Every week there was at least 2 free concerts.
Sure.
This is when Bob Seger was just starting, but there was kind of
Did you ever see the Tamler, the Motown Tamler reviews at the Fox?
No, I saw the Funkadelic stuff.
Okay, yeah, all right.
I saw
good.
We saw all the groups, because all the groups before they went on tour would have a mini tour, and the Flint area was one of the places
they go
to.
Okay, yeah, sure, yeah, yeah.
Sherwood Forest and Mount Holly up there.
Okay, yeah, well, Mount Holly is a legendary place for Seeger and those guys.
Yeah, 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 well, Seeger was, right. was commonplace. Seeger was like, we can watch Seeger again. It was that kind of thing. Because he was, what, out of Ann Arbor,
I think. Did you ever?
This is when Stevie Wonder was little. This is when Motown was going on. There was a lot of famous people that came through Flint and gave, I don't know if they were always free, but $15, $5, something.
Sure.
To get in Sherwood Forest, and you'd have just a whole roll of people performing that were pretty famous.
It would
back
come
then.
Right up. I was gonna say because I there's a shot. Let me
Edgar Winters came through, and geez, I can't even remember the names of all the groups. There's
so did you ever go to the Grandy Ballroom? You ever see any shows there?
No.
Where's
Grandy Ballroom at?
I don't even know where. It's just legendary.
It was on West Grand, but it wasn't West Grand. It was West Grand River.
Right. Well, it's hard to imagine, but there was free outdoor concerts every weekend. Now, this is during Vietnam, so there was a lot of protests. They'd bring a band in to get people together.
Right, right.
And then they'd have people speaking on different things. But, every week you'd have someplace to go to hear really good music free.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's cool.
And
somebody has called this. I mean, let me make this full screen if I can or blow it up anyway. This was called by somebody. I forget who said this. But this was called the most rock and roll picture ever taken. It's it's Bob Seger playing at Mount Holly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's Bob with the
that's,
right.
That's where I first saw him.
Yeah, and
that's where I first saw him.
And that is the Lodge. I mean, I
you know,
to
the first
Holly
time
team,
I ever saw a live band in my whole life, I was like 15 years old, and I walked into Mount Holly, and there was a stage, and these guys were playing.
And that is somebody
Bob
called
Seger's
that.
System
yeah, it was. I think this was not Bob Seger solo. This was one of his bands. But
he had the Bob Seger system.
You can look up the history of this because I read an article about it. That's where I got this from. But it was from, the most, and it's Bob Seger playing this ridiculous. What is that? That is a Jazzmaster. Is that what that?
I have no idea.
A Jaguar or a Jagmaster?
I don't think it's a Jaguar.
It's one of the funky Fenders.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's got flare leg jeans in different colors. The guitars
flare
are different
legs,
colors.
Brown tank top,
bell bottom,
flare
legs. Flare
leg is an English thing.
They became flares after the bells went out.
After bells went out, flare legs and
bell bottoms. Bells, then elfin bells, and they went down to flares.
Okay, but this is at Mount Holly, and it's a legendary.
Yeah,
thing.
Wow, that's
yeah,
cool.
There was a lot. Yeah. And also, who else? Grand Funk.
Yeah,
Grand Funk was local.
Yeah. Sure,
saw them a lot.
I have a connection to Grand. I have a connection to Grand Funk Railroad in comedy. If you want to hear this,
who's that?
I was doing a show at the Odawa Casino in Petoskey, which if you do the road for Yoder, they give it to you as a feature, and it's the worst gig in the history of comedy. It's the biggest. It's a nice
it's like
casino.
New Way Bar.
It is an
two.
Empty, giant
with
room
blackjack.
With like three people in it, and it's terrible. And they've set up the stage in different places. So I did it twice, and they set up the stage in different places. It was awful. Didn't help it either way. But one time I was behind the bar.
Uh-huh.
It was the stage behind the bar, which venues had. Club Bart had that for years. I used to host, but
Vegas used to have some places
yeah,
like that.
They, but they're kind of the loser's lounge. You know,
you go in there,
you lost all your money, and you go watch some guy sing, or some guy played a piano, or a guy tell jokes. Well, I'm in there telling jokes at Dawa Casino, and there's the one couple that I was like encouraging people to come sit at the bar. So a couple comes up, and they sit at the bar. And I got 30 minutes to kill and 20 minutes of material.
Yeah, right. You might as well talk to
him. I got 30 minutes to kill and I got 30 minutes of material I'm going to do in 20 minutes because no one's laughing, right?
Right, right, right.
So I start talking to the couple and they go, so what brings you in here? And they're like, well, we were watching a concert and we didn't like that, so we came in here and watched this. And I go, God, what awful concert were you watching? That was Mark Farner from Grand Funk Railroad. And this is 2007. Oh. They went to see Mark Farner. And I go, oh, you walked out of Mark Farner. And I go,
to see you.
And I go, did you get to hear him play We're an American Band? And they're like, no, we walked out before that. And I go, it's the only reason to go to see Mark Farner. What the fuck?
Yeah. Mistreater.
Yeah, no, he's got
Mistreater's good song.
Grand Funk's got some good stuff.
Yeah.
I argued
three guys. Just
I argued
three guys,
with
man.
Steve Miller about Grand Funk. He told me Grand Funk was good, and then I found every shitty hit they had, and I go, this sucks. He's like, no, and he started emailing me like Grand Funk songs. Listen to this one, it rocks.
Yeah.
And I went back and forth
with Steve Miller
on that, but. Yeah, but he said Grand Funk was good. But anyway, people walked out of Grand Farner and walked into my show.
Oh,
and I took that as a compliment.
Yeah.
I'm better than Mark Farner there in 2007,
yeah.
I guess. But
it's a credit.
But that was before they heard your stuff, too.
Yeah,
they
then
might
they heard my
they
stuff.
They went up and walked out of you.
He stayed for my
We're
going
to go back. We
got
to listen to Farner now.
He stayed for
Farner
my show.
Farner isn't so bad after we listened to Joel.
Well, look. He was playing the big room, making God knows how much money. And I was playing
the loser's bar.
The loser's lounge, making, I probably got 150 bucks.
Yeah, there you go.
And a hotel room, and I had to drive my ass to Petoskey. So it was not a good paying gig. But anyway, I think we're going to wrap it up for this episode of Joel Radio. Hope you enjoyed it. Again, one more plug for the class. If you're a comic and you think you're at the level, you want to be an MC, you want to kickstart your career, if you've done the beginner class with Bill Bouchard, or you just got 7 minutes of stuff and you want to make it better, come see me over at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. Show Saturday afternoons, 1:30 is when we're going to start that this time, and it starts January 7th. So call 248-542-9900. It's $175.
Definitely worth it.
And thank you, Steve, and thank you, Ted, for coming in.
It was a lot of fun.
And I'm proud of all my guys that I see working and winning contests and doing gigs and all that.
Yeah,
well,
we appreciate the help you gave us, man.
And thank you for being here. People love when we talk about comedy on the show.
Yeah.
We did a real nuts and bolts kind of talk about it this time, and I think we did. And the next time you'll hear the New Way Bar, which will be none of my students, and they're all going to suck. That sounds good.
Maybe I should go there for once.
I'll promote it probably on Facebook, and I'll tell people, you know, hey, I'll be at New Way Bar. Because I don't plan on, like, recording people's sets without their permission, because I don't think that's fair to comedians to tape them without their permission.
Yeah.
But I'll say, you know, like, if it was a guy I like, I might go, hey, can I hear 5 minutes of your stuff on the show, and then we'll talk about it. Because there are guys that I like. Because some guys do stuff that's different, and I want people to hear. You know, like, I did a show, one of the best-received shows of the year is when we went and did this benefit that Bob Phillips put together. I have a little plaque up from it. It was a veterans charity that Bob Phillips runs. Mm-hmm. And he put, like, 13 guys. All veterans, you know, all veteran comedians, you know, four veterans. And I brought my recorder to that, and I just kind of walked around and interviewed all the guys when they got off stage. And it was like a real reunion of comics, because we don't see each other all that often.
Right.
And just kind of kept the tape rolling. People loved it.
That's cool.
And so I'm kind of trying to do this thing at more of a, not a veteran comedian level, but a new comedian level.
Sure.
And we'll see. We'll hear guys who just, you know, we'll probably go sit in someone's van and smoke a joint on the show. Whatever it takes. You'll hear all of it.
Just to keep it rolling.
That's what people do when they go and do that show. I don't do that when I go do the New Way Bar, but I will for the show. You know?
Yes. Right.
It'll
make
that for a
sacrifice.
Good show. So anyway, I want to thank you guys for joining me once again.
Thanks
Ted
for having
Moss,
us. Yeah.
Thanks.
Steve Hansen. Like I said, I've been wanting to do something around the class for a while, and I thought maybe I'd record a whole session of the class and get the questions and answers in there, but I decided it was probably just better to do it this way, and I want to thank you guys. And again,
sure, it was a lot of fun.
You know, something
thanks,
I can,
Joel. Good
I
being
can,
here.
I can put up whenever there's a class and go, hey, just listen to this. You know, this will tell you more about the class if
sure
you have
thing.
Any questions. Because I always do a big write-up online and on Facebook. And this will give you a little more of a feel for my style of talking about comedy and teaching and that you guys had success. So thank you guys again, and thank everybody for listening. Joel Radio, thanks again. Star Wars Rogue One review will be up late Thursday night, early Friday. So even if you haven't seen it yet, we'll probably be spoiler-free for the first 10 minutes, and then you can pause it, go see Star Wars, come back and listen to the rest. We did it last year, and we did it for the Ghostbusters, and so I'd like to do those early reviews when we can. So we got a big review planned to that, and then hopefully I'll be at the New Way Bar. Maybe not. I want to find out why Ahmed Jane does that 20-minute set, and if I can get to the bottom, it will be a bigger investigation than Tickle. That will be more digging, and maybe it'll make you more uncomfortable than Tickle. I think. Yeah. But thanks for listening. Good night, everybody.